MS Trump, a World War II era submarine. Staying over in the United States, the unhelpful comments from our ambassador, Sir Christian Turner, speaking about the relationship between the US and Israel.
I think there is probably one country that has a special relationship with the United States, and that's probably Israel.
We really can pick him, can't we? That's the man in Washington. What of the man, of course, who preceded him? Peter Mandelson. Well, former Downing Street Chief of Staff Morgan McSweeney said yesterday,
"The appointment of Mandelson as ambassador was a serious error of judgment. I advised the Prime Minister in support of that appointment, and I was wrong to do so."
Plus, does BP actually stand for blatant profiteering as they're making £366 a second in profits? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the King has told Congress that the alliance between the UK and US is more important than ever. He made a speech for US lawmakers as part of his four-day state visit.
America's words carry weight and meaning, as they have since independence. The actions of this great nation matter even more. President Lincoln understood this so well with his reflection in the magisterial Gettysburg Address, that the world may little note what we say, but will never forget what we do.
King Charles went on to attend a state dinner at the White House with Queen Camilla. Donald Trump used his toast to claim the King agrees with him about Iran having a nuclear weapon.
"We have militarily defeated that particular opponent, and we're never going to let that opponent ever, Charles agrees with me, even more than I do, we're never going to let that opponent have a nuclear weapon. They know that, and they've known it right now very powerfully."
Ministers say a motion calling for Sir Keir Starmer to face a parliamentary inquiry was a political stunt. A Tory-led motion demanding the Prime Minister be investigated over his comments about the vetting of Peter Mandelson was voted down last night. Offering better testing after a miscarriage in the UK could prevent 10,000 losses a year. The pregnancy charity Tommy's says the current care leaves families unsupported. The NHS currently waits for someone to have three losses before running tests. An annual report has found Europe is losing snow and ice cover in its coldest regions. Scientists and experts worked together on the UN-backed European State of the Climate report. They found at least 95% of the continent experienced above average temperatures last year. And drivers are being warned to expect the busiest early May bank holiday weekend on the roads in a decade. The RAC says we could see 19 million trips between Friday and Monday. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 10,332 after closing up 11 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a chilly start for most of the UK with some fog patches, clearing up to leave sunny spells later though, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Fire up the Barbie! With Aldi's barbecue bundle, you can rustle up burgers to feed four. Get British beef quarter pounders, white rolls, baby leaf salad, cheese slices and tomato ketchup, all for under a super £6.50. That's flipping amazing value from Aldi. Which cheapest supermarket 2025?
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven, Wednesday, April the 29th. The King's speech that appears to have thrilled a nation. King Charles has done it again. The old pals act between the United Kingdom and the United States is back on. But I'll be asking, once we've given you full coverage of that speech, should we be that tight with the United States, or noticing, of course, that Europe's just 22 miles across the water, should we be working harder at our relationship with our European friends? We'll ask you which side you would pick in that. In other news,
Sir Keir Starmer wins a crunch vote in the Commons and will now not be sent to a sleaze inquiry. But how much will this latest episode cost him? I'm LBC's Aggie Chambray with the details from an astonishing day in Westminster.
To the oil giant BP, should it stand for blatant profiteering? It made £2.4 million in profit in the first quarter thanks to a surge in wholesale oil prices. What are the government's promise that it would crack down on profiteering? Is it right that it's making, or it is making, £366 a second while we're all feeling pain at the pumps? One government minister, Ed Miliband, is furious. We'll have more on that. Plus, the suspected attack, us attacking Golders Green. One resident, Mohammed, has told LBC.
This place is just pictures of the people killed, but it's nothing to do with any politics. But why they do that? We don't understand.
Plus, help after the first miscarriage, not the third, the NHS is urged. We'll look at that important health matter later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Noting that it will only probably have wrapped up within the last few hours, but already the reviews are in, and it is a success. The King, King Charles, saying the relationship between the Britain and the United States is more important today than it has ever been. And as you've heard on news bulletins throughout the course of this morning, he also did make references, important references, to the situation in Ukraine and Iran, and, of course, as I said, the historical relationship. But the day started with the King telling Congress about the alliance being more important than ever. Repeated, I think, 12 standing ovations during the speech. And LBC's reporter Joe Draper was in the room for the speech.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you His Majesty Charles III.
You could feel the genuine warmth for King Charles as he arrived in Congress. His quintessential wit charming Democrats and Republicans alike.
This is a city which symbolises a period in our shared history, or what Charles Dickens might have called a tale of two Georges. The first president, George Washington, and my five times great-grandfather, King George III. King George, as you know, never set foot in America. And please rest assured, ladies and gentlemen, I am not here as part of some cunning rearguard action.
The King described the special relationship as something eternal and unbreakable, an awkward contrast to the leaked comments by British Ambassador Sir Christian Turner, which emerged just hours earlier.
Special relationship is a phrase I try not to utter, because it's quite nostalgic, it's quite backwards-looking, and it has a lot of sort of baggage about it. I think there is probably one country that has a special relationship with the United States, and that is probably Israel.
The King stayed above daily politics in his speech, his comments supporting the NATO alliance and the Ukrainian war effort drawing huge applause.
In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, when NATO invoked Article 5, for the first time, and the United Nations Security Council was united in the face of terror, we answered the call together, as our people have done so for more than a century, shoulder to shoulder through two world wars, the Cold War, Afghanistan, and moments that have defined our shared security. Today, Mr. Speaker, that same unyielding resolve is needed for the defence of Ukraine and her most courageous people.
But it didn't take long for party divides to show themselves, as His Majesty described the importance of checks and balances on executive power. The cheers from the Democrats in the room were noticeably louder, to the visible frustration of many of the Republicans.
The US Supreme Court Historical Society has calculated that Magna Carta is cited in at least 160 Supreme Court cases since 1789, not least as the foundation of the principle that executive power is subject to checks and balances.
President Trump wasn't in the chamber, but he was clearly impressed.
I want to congratulate Charles on having made a fantastic speech today at Congress. He got the Democrats to stand. I've never been able to do that. I couldn't believe it.
The grand state banquet at the White House, with speeches from the King and President Trump, rounded off a historic day here in Washington.
Obviously, it's Joseph Draper reporting. Let's stay with President Trump. Now, in his speech, he managed to stay largely out of politics, but he did bring in a few references about the conflict with Iran.
We're doing a little Middle East work right now, too, if you might know, and we're doing very well. We have militarily defeated that particular opponent, and we're never going to let that opponent ever, Charles agrees with me, even more than I do, We're never going to let that opponent have a nuclear weapon. They know that, and they've known it right now very powerfully.
Charles agrees with me even more than I do. That's a complex one. That's probably half an hour's work for a psychiatrist to go through that. But all praise the speechwriters for humour from the King.
Indeed, you recently commented, Mr. President, that if it were not for the United States, European countries would be speaking German. Dare I say that if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking French. I cannot help noticing the readjustments to the East Wing, Mr. President. Following your visit to Windsor Castle last year, and I'm sorry to say that we British, of course, made our own small attempt at real estate redevelopment of the White House in 1814. 250 years ago, or as we say in the United Kingdom, just the other day.
Very good speech. Right. But which should take precedence? Our relationship, special or not, with the United States, or, of course, possibly the trading bloc that is Europe? Lucy Harris is a former Brexit Party Conservative MEP, also former Conservative advisor. Which takes precedence in your book and why? Good morning.
Hi, nice to be on. A great speech from the King. Fantastic humour. But look, ideally you want to have a good relationship with both the US and the EU, obviously. But from my perspective, being close with the EU prevents us from being outward looking. And in the King's speech, he did sort of gently criticise the concept of being inward looking. But to realign ourselves with the EU, as Keir is planning to do with his dynamic realignment, would mean that we would be inward looking. We wouldn't be able to have those trade deals that we spent a very long time as Conservatives trying to put together post-Brexit. We wouldn't be able to have those trading relationships. And in fact, a lot of those trading relationships would have to be torn up in the scenario that we would be closer to the European Union.
You don't think our trading has been damaged by the distance now between the United Kingdom and the rest of the European Union?
Well, look, I think the fact that we have a better tariff rate with the US and we have the opportunity for a free trade agreement with the US in the future gives us a better rapport and the ability to have other better trading relationships with other countries across the world. And I think that's what really matters. But also, if we were to dynamically realign with the EU, there are significant issues for our economy that would come down the line in terms of signing up to those new compliance and regulatory issues.
But there are many industries that talk, of course, of the hurdles and the blocks in trying to import or export to the European bloc.
Mm-hmm. But what those industries are also going to have a problem with is the cost of energy. And if we are to sign up to the new rules with the EU, we are going to have significant issues with planning regulations, which would mean that we could not build that essential energy infrastructure to bring down the cost of energy and increase GDP and GDP per capita for this country. So if they are concerned about costs, they should be concerned about energy costs. And signing up with the European Union, particularly when it comes to further planning compliance regulation, would mean even more significant costs for them as well.
Lucy Harris, grateful for your time. You were a Brexit Party and Conservative MEP, 13 after 7. Now, I don't want to revisit the Brexit argument, but that's on the trading side. Let's bring Pablo Ohana into the conversation, a political strategist, worked on the Kamala Harris campaign, and as a columnist for The Metro. We want good relations, of course, with our American friends and our European friends, but which do you think, Pablo, should take precedence and why? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, listen, I think it's clear. It's a question about values. So the King's speech was notable precisely because it sort of revealed the gap between the UK and Trump's America, actually. It was quite sharp. It praised things like NATO commitments, called for resolve on Ukraine, climate action, things like that. Listen, these are actually positions that are inherently British. They're British values. We're the country that has repeatedly opened our arms to refugees, whether it was in World War II, whether it's Ukraine today. And I think it is a fundamental question about who we are as a country. I'm incredibly proud of our country. When I look back at our history, obviously it is not flawless, needless to say. But there are so many times I look back and I think we were the moral compass for the world. When Russia invaded Ukraine, a lot of the world, a lot of Europe looked to the UK to see what we would say and what we would do. And it's not often that I would praise Boris Johnson, but to his credit, he didn't blink before choosing a side. And I think that is fundamentally what and who the United Kingdom is. And that isn't where the United States is. There is a huge gap between the two countries at the moment.
Well, you referenced NATO, Pablo, but of course, the United States is a massive financial backer of NATO, and many European countries don't even reach the minimum contribution level. So surely, again, if we look towards defence and upholding the British values you correctly cite, then that's a key role for the US, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I would never advocate, you know, we should not be cutting ties with the US. I just think that there needs to be a very clear sort of sense of values where we say, listen, this is who we are. And I think, you know, the King, to his credit, did quite a good job of sort of explaining those two differences, you know, in a very kind of British way, very, very subtle. And it's not about walking away from the US, but I think if we are looking about where we should align ourselves, it should be with our neighbours. You know, your last guest was talking about the economy. The trade deals that we have struck up since leaving the EU make up less than all of them, by the way, all of them combined, make up less than 1% of the trade that we had with the EU. So it's, you know, there is a very clear economic cost to our country from leaving the EU. And that has, by the way, been £1 million every single hour since we left the EU. We've lost more in trade since we left the EU than our entire net contributions for the whole time we were in it.
Right.
So that's the economic argument, but I still think that there is, particularly with reference to the King's speech, it is a very clear sense of who we are as a country, and you just have to look at everything to do with the US right now. It's not just the gun violence, it's not just the human rights and the democracy erosion, it's not just kind of, you know, things like access to abortion. You know, that's not who our country is.
All right, I must leave only for time reasons. Pablo, I have enjoyed it. We will talk again. Thank you, Pablo O'Hanna, political strategist and columnist for The Metro. Of course, we want good relations with both, but on the defence side, surely, we look to the United States, and on the trade side, we look to the European Union. We'll take your views on that. And in a related story, the speech in some way overshadowed by these comments, published by the Financial Times from the UK's ambassador to the US, Sir Christian Turner.
I think there is probably one country that has a special relationship with the United States, and that's probably Israel.
More on that after this. 7:16 LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
The King has told Congress that the alliance between the UK and US is more important than ever. Ministers say a motion calling for Sir Keir Starmer to face a parliamentary inquiry was a political stunt. And offering better testing after a miscarriage in the UK could prevent 10,000 losses a year. LBC weather, a cold start for most of the UK, but clearing up to leave sunny spells later, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the M25, the clockwise entry slip road at Junction 21 is closed. That's coming from the M1 southbound. It's because of an accident and there are delays on the M1 as a result. And also on the M25, anti-clockwise, it's busy from Junction 21 at the M1 to 20 at King's Langley as traffic diverts around. And that's having a knock-on effect to the A41 as well. It's slow all the way back to Hemel Hempstead. Now, elsewhere on the M25, there are queues clockwise from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to just before 10 at the A3. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. On the Underground, there are still minor delays on the Circle, Metropolitan and Northern lines.
This is LBC.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my
mouth.
My tip
weight
is...
Loss?
I
no, forget
I, that.
You
just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or... you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, lower fat diet. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier. Trusted by over 8 million customers. Because we do things differently. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no. Just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Wander the streets with more wonder. With up to £200 off city breaks and up to 20% off flights. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and at all protected. T's and C's apply.
proper.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota electrified saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:20, coming to your reactions in the moment. The sort of trade, the amount of trade that's been lost with the European Union, as outlined by Pablo Hanna, the newspaper columnist, or the fact that we need to look very much at defence, the amount of money, of course, that NATO is funded by the United States. I remind you, a whole series of European countries don't even reach the minimum commitment. And the rather strained relationship when the Ukraine war first broke out, first broke out, trying to get some NATO partners to join in. But it is, of course, unsurprising on the front page of all the newspapers. Bear in mind, of course, the time difference. So this, they've not got everything from last night US time. But they have got pictures of the President Trump sitting there with the Prime Minister, sorry, sitting with the King in the Oval Office at the White House, showing the UK and US are still bonded by that relationship, as it's called. Those are the front page pictures for virtually every single newspaper. The big front page story, possibly, though, is, and we will bring you full details on that, what appears to be now the Labour revolt is over. Starmer's sleaze cover-up is how the Daily Mail puts it. The Daily Express pick up on comments from Kemi Badenoch, also said, of course, on this show yesterday, you are part of the Mandelson cover-up. And the Financial Times gets away with a cracking story, and we're going to look at that in more detail later in the show. US special relationship is probably Israel, says Ambassador in leaked remarks. We are looking at that in more detail, as I say, later in the show. And let's pick one other story from some of the front pages, and it is actually the Daily Telegraph still going now with the political agenda, the idea that Angela Rayner could be brought back. There's a possibility Sir Keir Starmer has privately offered Angela Rayner return to the cabinet in an apparent attempt to head off a leadership coup. The Telegraph says the Prime Minister is extending an olive branch to his former deputy earlier this month. Of course, it will have to wait. It is thought that that investigation into her tax affairs concerning the sale of a property down in Sussex, it is reported that that will be concluded at some point during this week. And that could, of course, leave the course free for that then to take place. I should tell you, I mentioned Kemi Badenoch. There was a bit of a viral storm after she appeared on this show and responding to a caller, Malik in Leicester, who questioned whether the Conservative Party has a problem with Muslims. This was Mrs. Badenoch's response.
Let me first of all start by explaining my background. My grandmother was a Muslim. Okay, I was born in a country that was 50% Muslim. I said Muslim prayers on Friday because that's what happened there when I was at school. I have good friends who are Muslim. There are many different ways of expressing your religion.
Now, that elicited hundreds of thousands of people on social media to whip up a social media storm. So, just to make it absolutely plain, what Mrs. Badenoch was saying was that she was born in the United Kingdom, but she grew up in a country that's 50% Muslim. So let's just hope that tries to abate a storm. She wasn't born in one, she grew up in one. She was born in the United Kingdom, so that was the point she was trying to make. So I'm sure hundreds of thousands more will now pile in, but that's just to get that absolutely on the record. To the LBC app, they quite rightly go, with the latest details, of course, from King Charles' speech and as the royal tour progresses, and that really is dominating all the online traffic as well. Now, let's get the other big story out of the way, as it were, which are events yesterday concerning the appointment of the ambassador to Washington, Peter Mandelson. You'll hear later in the show that the new ambassador has managed to whip up a storm. But let's go back and get into more details of how exactly he, Mandelson, got the job and turn to Aggie Chambray, LBC's deputy political editor. What did we learn yesterday from one of the so-called princes of darkness, Morgan McSweeney? Aggie, good morning.
Well, Nick, I think we learned a huge amount. In the evening, we found out that Sir Keir Starmer survives to fight another day. He won that vote. He'll now not be sent to the same sleaze inquiry that helped to finish off Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. The House of Commons voted 335 to 223 against the Conservative-led motion to refer him to the Privileges Committee. But the government expended huge amounts of political capital doing so. They put down a three-line whip, effectively an effort to force MPs to vote with them, got cabinet ministers to ring round MPs, and big beasts intervened on the media too, like Alan Johnson yesterday on your show and Gordon Brown too. But still, some of those Labour MPs walked through the opposing lobby to the government, like Labour MP Emma Lull. This was her speaking during the debate.
Like the public, I feel let down, disappointed, and I am angry. Peter Mandelson should never have been appointed. This was a fundamental failure of judgment. I feel the way that today's vote has been handled by the government smacks once again of being out of touch and disconnected from the public mood.
Emma Lull was one of 14 Labour MPs to rebel. Number 10 has said this morning there's no update on whipping, so we don't know yet if they might lose the whip for this act. The nub of Kemi Badenoch's argument, as you heard yesterday morning, Nick, was that the Prime Minister misled MPs over the vetting of Peter Mandelson when he said all due process was followed and that no pressure whatsoever was applied to officials in the Foreign Office. But those questions were being asked also down the corridor in the House of Commons earlier in the day to two different people. First up at 9 a.m. At the Foreign Affairs Select Committee was the former Foreign Office civil service boss, Sir Philip Barton, who said on pressure, he said, "I wasn't aware of any pressure on the substance of the Mandelson vetting case, but was there pressure? Absolutely." And on that second point about due process, his answer was pretty revealing. Listen to the silence at the beginning of his answer when he was asked if all due process was followed.
I'm going to dodge. I'm really sorry, but I just actually don't think it's for me to sit here in, it's not for me to, it's for others, including, all of you as members of Parliament to come to a view on that.
And then it was the turn of the lesser spotted Morgan McSweeney, the former right-hand man of Sir Keir Starmer, the man we'd heard so much about but never really heard from. And he began with this personal statement.
"The appointment of Mandelson as ambassador was a serious error of judgment. I advised the Prime Minister in support of that appointment, and I was wrong to do so. It is also important, however, to distinguish between what I did do and what I did not do. What I did do was make a recommendation based on my judgment that Mandelson's experience, relationships and political skills could serve the national interest in Washington at an important moment. That judgment was a mistake."
He also admitted to asking Sir Philip to conduct the process at pace, but not to do anything improper. And he said he was surprised to hear about the depth of relationship between Lord Mandelson, Peter Mandelson and Jeffrey Epstein.
"How I understood it at the time was a passing acquaintance that he regretted having and that he apologised for. When I saw the pictures, when I saw the Bloomberg questions in September 2025, I have to say it was like a knife through my soul."
Knife through his soul, he said. I think it is worth flagging that, of course, the government did know before Lord Mandelson was appointed that he did have a continued relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, and it was flagged as a potential reputational risk. Of course, more did come out. There is a hope, I think, that this might be the end of this particular chapter on Lord Mandelson, but there is, of course, another tranche of documents expected on his appointment. They will be released after the May elections. And now, of course, there's a new ambassadorial crisis for them to deal with. As you say, leaked recordings yesterday shows the UK's ambassador to the US, Christian Turner, saying the only country that has a special relationship with the United States is probably Israel during the state visit of all places, which, Nick, I think you'll be hearing more about later in the show.
Aggie, before I let you go, the political commentators and political editors are all rating yesterday. Fraser Nelson in the Times, the PM survived but will die another day. Similar comments from Hugo Guy in the Eye, the political editor of the Daily Express, Martin Brown, pretty much the same. Stephen Glover in the Mail saying the PM is just clinging to power. You referenced this at the start of your report. Aggie, how does he emerge from this?
I think weakened. I think it was always going to be a really difficult day. I think those two select committee appearances could have gone worse, but there were still bad moments for him, like the fact that Sir Philip Barton did not want to say that due process was followed, and the fact that they had to really push to get MPs to vote with them. Yes, they got the huge, vast majority of MPs to vote with them in the end, but I spoke to MPs who were uncomfortable with it, and I do think that this will have weakened him. This will be difficult, and of course, next week, week, there's those set of elections which are going to be really, really difficult for him.
Aggie Shombray, LBC's Deputy Political Editor, reporting 7:29. Robert in Hawley, just asking, which one do we feel we want great relationships with both? Do we look to the trade with the European Union or, of course, look to defence to the United States? Which way would you look, Robert? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hi. Well, I'm not trying to be awkward there, but I look towards both. I'm closer to the European Union because they are still exhibiting my paintings. So Germany is still exhibiting my paintings, where in London I've had no luck.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. So, and I've always been close to European painters from the, like, early 30s and 20s.
Should I know you, Robert? Should I be up with art, or are you an up-and-coming artist? What's the story? Can I have your last name?
Yeah, it's Meldrum.
Okay.
Meldrum. It's a Scottish name.
And what do you paint?
So, very, very contemporary. They're kind of like landscapes, but they're very contemporary, but they're based around culture and nature.
And where do you get your inspiration?
I live near an airport. It's an incredible mixture of, it's a suburban landscape, but it's not a traditional one. If you know around Gatwick, you've got leisure parks, retails, gyms, deer, badgers.
Where is the art world more vibrant? The United States, the art world that you are part of, the United States or Europe?
Well, the art world has its international centres, like sort of New York, Los Angeles, Basel, Paris, New York, London. They've existed sometimes. The Americans sort of inherit, there's a sort of, it's a cliche, but it's kind of true, where America took over the crown of painting after the war. Mm. And I was very much influenced by American painters like Jasper Johns, William de Kooning, Pollock, Rauschenberg. So I've got that influence there, which I had to kind of fight to remove myself from.
I must leave it there because, we're over time. Robert, fascinating speaking with you. Thank you. We'll take more of where you see. We want, as I say, we're not suggesting we want to turn our back on either. But where should we now be forging the relationship? Is it really looking to the European Union? Or, of course, as we heard from the King, the United States? We'll take more calls on that. Robert, thank you. Also after the news.
Ed Miliband launches a broadside against BP's huge profits, but has he missed the point? I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this with Nick shortly.
Indeed, straight after the news, in fact. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news headlines from Lottie Morley.
The King has spoken to US lawmakers about the unbreakable relationship between Britain and America. He addressed Congress overnight, followed by a state banquet at the White House. Sir Keir Starmer has survived a vote calling for him to face a parliamentary inquiry over the Peter Mandelson vetting row. MPs decided he shouldn't face the Privileges Committee to answer claims he misled Parliament. A pregnancy charity says better care for women in the UK could prevent 10,000 miscarriages a year. The NHS currently only offers testing after someone's had three. LBC weather, sunshine for most of the UK this morning, feeling warm with highs of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
I should not have appointed Peter Mandelson, and I apologise again to the victims of the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, who were clearly failed by my decision.
Hear every side of the story.
Keir Starmer is completely devoid of curiosity. He never asks questions. He has no interest in inquiring about anything.
It shouldn't be on the Prime Minister to then doubt and second guess every single official.
I'm paying a third more in fuel costs to fill my vehicle.
It just feels like passing much of a luxury now to heat your house.
I had to increase the rent quite considerably. And it's a choice between, do I eat tonight or don't I eat tonight?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
Better Bad Buzz.
What do you value most?
Reliability.
Quality family time.
My social life.
With Wi-Fi to keep you entertained and fares capped at £3, travelling with Metrobus gives you the time and freedom to enjoy what matters to you. Download the Metrobus app today for tickets, journey planning and live updates.
Better.
Wherever you're heading, it's better by bus.
Better by bus.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up on 7:35, more on our friendship, our relationship with the United States, and, of course, with the European Union. Where should we be looking for trade? And praise, of course, for the King's speech, as more details emerge from that. But into the world of business now, Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. And there's a bit of a row going on about the profits of one particular company. Which is it and why? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. We talked yesterday about BP's profits, which were astronomical in their most recent update. They hit 2.4 billion between January and March. That's 2.4 billion in profit between January and March of this year. That was up over a billion from the same period last year. The company described it as exceptional. Ed Miliband, the energy secretary, described it as morally and economically wrong. Now, that was in a post on X, which he subsequently deleted, as well he might have done, given that I can unpick a number of things that are not quite right about a senior politician branding a company's performance and profits in such a way. UK-listed company, by the way. Morally and economically wrong, he said. Well, some people might agree that it's morally, maybe people might say, uncomfortable for a company to be so obviously and literally profiting from a period of extreme volatility and hardship for many. But the problem with it is, and this is where I think he's missed his mark on the economically wrong observation. He says this is why we're taxing these windfall profits to help support the cost of living. But he's not, because the vast majority of these exceptional profits came not from domestic UK oil and gas exploration, which is what windfall profits are applied to, but to their oil trading division. And that will be taxed in the normal way, i.e. through corporation tax and through taxes on the salaries and bonuses that are provided to the people in that division. So he was, in fact, himself economically wrong. And then there will, of course, be a perfectly valid debate as to the extent to which he was right on the moral point. I don't think he is, by the way. Britain has two of the world's top 5 major oil and gas companies listed here in the UK. Huge expertise, jobs and revenue. If the government wants to start saying that they're morally wrong or reprehensible for performing in the way they perform, then don't be surprised if they disappear. And I think we'd all literally be the poorer for that.
How do windfall taxes work? Is Mr. Miliband right to say that they are levied at some point, Christian?
Well, they are indeed levied on the profits generated through the exploration and extraction of oil and gas in the UK. And the fact of the matter is that those windfall profits are sufficiently high as to deter such activity at the moment. And there's an ongoing debate, as you know, about whether or not we should try to encourage more exploration of our own natural resources. But the profits are taxed in the location in which they are generated. And it's true that the vast majority of the profits that we're referring to now were generated in the trading division of BP. And they will be taxed accordingly, but they are completely separate from what Miliband referred to before he deleted it as coming under the windfall levy here in the UK.
All right. Staying with this sector, who's saying oil be out of OPEC?
OPEC is the cartel of oil and gas producing countries, and huge membership base around the Middle East, of course. And they agree and oversee oil production and therefore prices. Now, the United Arab Emirates has announced it is going to withdraw from that agreement. They must have been in there since, I think, the 70s, alongside all those other large oil-producing Gulf states. So the UAE has said they're going to come out of that from the 1st of May. They are the fourth largest exporter, oil exporter in the world. And if they leave that agreement body, then they will be free to increase their own production of oil, certainly once shipments that are currently stalled by the conflict resume. They also want to ramp up their gas production. So as if there wasn't already enough disruption in the global energy markets and oil markets, This is something which over time could have quite a profound effect on the rate of oil and gas coming onto the market and therefore the price of it. It will allow for a little more competition. And there are arguments in favour of that if they want to go their own way and make their own decisions about the amount they're going to produce and release into the market. It will take some time for, I think, other members of this organisation to digest the implications, and the wider market implications probably won't get a full sense of it until we've calmed right down again, hopefully not before too long, from this war in Iran. And then you'll see the consequences of one of the largest players leaving this organisation. So analysts and economists will be poring over the implications of that decision.
And you've been looking at some of the consequences of the war in Iran in your front page today with the one single word, ouch. To what does that refer?
It refers to the latest report from the UK's oldest economics think tank, the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. You published yesterday, released it this morning rather, a major report into the implications of the war in Iran for the UK economy. And they warn that growth is going to be downgraded. They were one of the more optimistic for growth in the UK for this year before the war. They thought it would be about 1.4%, slightly higher than most people thought. They've slashed that now to 0.9%, and they say the economy will barely reach above that even next year. So those are really quite dramatic downgrades, in line with other forecasters making the same call. But they also warn that the UK will find itself on the brink of recession, and that there will be huge debates around the extent to which the Chancellor's fiscal headroom is almost completely wiped out, with consequences for decisions on spending and tax in the UK, and indeed big debates about the future rate of interest rate reductions. Now, they say they've got a variety of scenarios. Their more benign scenario, as they see it, would have interest rates rising by 25 basis points, that is up to 4%, and growth downgraded as they forecast. But even in that benign scenario, they say that Rachel Reeves' current tax and spending plans are untenable. And they have, I'm afraid to say, some slightly more dramatic scenarios where this war and associated uncertainty continues to the extent that the oil price rises and stays high. And in that scenario, they say there's going to be a string of interest rate rises, which will have to be done gradually, and which will therefore still allow inflation to creep up even perhaps as high as 5%. So those are worst-case scenarios, but okay, they're worth considering.
Christian Mayer, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, thank you for that. 7:41, let's come back to our conversation about rating the King's performance, of course, and also looking after that, where we look to our friendship, of course, with our European cousins as well. Williams and Harrow, the point you want to make, William, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Farrar.
Hello, sir.
I think we should be turning more towards Europe all the time. We should go back into the European Union.
Right about that. But why would you say that that is where the future lies?
Well, we can only see in the last, since this latest conflict started, and especially since Mr. Trump got in, you can see that they don't care about what we think. Also, let me add that even under Mr. Biden, we vetoed at least 5 ceasefires requests in the UN. We vetoed them along with America because we had to go along with them. Now,
we don't have to go along with them. We've not gone along with them as regards Iran.
No, but Iran is a different story. He tore up the thing by Trump. He caused the Iran war.
I think that's undoubtedly, well, along with Israel, of course, is undoubtedly true. William, thank you for your view. You want to look forward to the European Union. We'll take more views and verdicts on that. Just to remind you, as regards William mentions, that we are looking at those rather untimely comments from the man who is now the ambassador in Washington, Sir Christian Turner, on the relationship between the US and Israel. That's coming up later in the show. But to events here in London, and counter-terror police will investigate a suspected arson attack at a memorial wall in Golders Green. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight joins us from the scene. Fraser, good morning. What you got?
Nick, good morning. There's a great deal of concern around here in Golders Green. This is 2 arson attacks now, just a few hundred yards from each other in the space of a month. The latest early on Monday morning was targeting a memorial wall here dedicated to hundreds of protesters who were killed as they spoke out against the Iranian regime earlier this year. Thankfully, it hasn't caused much damage other than a small amount of charring. These men helped set it up.
is shocked, very upset, and very nervous because this place is just pictures of the people killed, but it's nothing to do with any politics. Why they do that? We don't understand.
We're setting up this wall, asking people. Lots of people came here. They got families, which is them families on the wall. They stand, they cry, they never see them, you know. So this is so sad.
And this wall in Golders Green is just a few streets away from the synagogue where four Jewish ambulances were gutted by flames at the end of March. Since then, we've seen a synagogue in Harrow targeted as well as a Jewish business, an attack on the offices of a Persian media channel in Wembley, a drone dropping off jars of unknown substances near the Iranian embassy, and now this, which counter-terrorism police are also investigating. And even for people who are not part of the Jewish or Iranian community, it's causing anxiety.
It's awful.
Yeah. Trying to think it's not gonna happen to me, you know, well, it's not normal.
It's a mixed community, majority is Jewish, I would say, so I don't think they will feel good about it.
Do you think it makes them feel less welcome?
It might. If it was me, I would say so.
How much do you think the community kind of has to pull together in a moment like this?
I think that I see some rallies against it, so I think that they are doing that all together.
And while nothing has been confirmed yet, there is a worry from police that some of these attacks, of course, may have been ordered by Iran using proxies here. Last week, LBC revealed how easily that's happening on social media undercover. We were offered money to set fire to a photo of Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu on the streets of London. We're told no arrests have been made here on this attack yet, but since the fire at the synagogue around the corner, police say 26 arrests have been made in total, 8 charges have been brought, and one person has pleaded guilty to arson at the Canton United Synagogue.
LBC's Fraser Knight reporting. Let's just pick up on some of the reaction coming in on the conversation we're having about the King. Miriam says, I felt an unexpected surge of pride during the King's speech. Don't know quite why, because I know he didn't write it, although I suspect he agreed with every word. But the bell from a clapped-out old boat named Trump was great. A bit of fun, and don't we all need that right now? Dawn in Beckham, the King gave a brilliantly written speech with style and humour, and the ambassador spoiled it by saying one line, he's a plonker. We're looking at those words from Sir Christian Turner. Not particularly skilled, I would imagine, the field of diplomacy later in the show. But coming up immediately after the news... As the government confirms it will bring forward further reforms to right to buy for council tenants in England, are they building houses behind it? And how are they doing with those building targets? It's after the 7:46 LBC news headlines, read by Lottie Morley.
The King has spoken to US lawmakers about the unbreakable relationship between Britain and America. Sir Keir Starmer has survived a vote calling for him to face a parliamentary inquiry over the Peter Mandelson vetting row. And a pregnancy charity says better care for women in the UK could prevent 10,000 miscarriages a year. LBC weather, sunshine for most of the UK this morning with a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webbs. The severe delays on the M1 and the M25 do continue because the M1 southbound exit slip road to the M25 clockwise remains closed. It's causing delays southbound on the M1 from Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead, and it's also causing delays on the M25 anti-clockwise up to Junction 20 at King's Langley, and then a knock-on effect to the A405 and the A41. Now, elsewhere, it's very slow on the A12 southbound heading down towards the Blackwood Tunnel. That was after that accident from earlier, just before the A13 junction. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are at a standstill northbound from Gerrards Cross to High Wycombe, and Southern and Gatwick Express services are disrupted via Balham.
LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the ribbon can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wickes has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics, and options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes
and Forever Homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
On day three of leftovers for lunch, have a day off. Switch it up with a double cheeseburger for $2.49 on the McDonald's Saver menu.
Leftovers left the chat.
Talk about saver satisfaction. Served from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before 8. More on this idea as regards being the right to buy in England in a moment from a government minister. Just to mark the fact that we are going to be doing these stories later on, they're coming up in the next hours, the one by the rather intemperate comments perhaps from the British ambassador talking about the special relationship actually existing between the United States and Israel. Full coverage, but to set that up, Shailesh has already texted in, perhaps our ambassador could be right. Over the years, we Brits are obsessed with this special relationship, but it is only one way. US takes and we give. Extradition treaty is one way. Supporting the wars is one way. It hurts us. Trade deals is one way, and it's not only dealing with Trump, it's also previous presidents. Ask a US national, and they've not got a clue about the special relationship. Not sure if it's always that war is one way. But certainly I will say, from experience of having lived over there, Shailesh, yes, the special relationship is something you never hear mentioned, I have to say, by US media. And the French would claim that they have a special relationship as well. And indeed the Irish would claim that they have a special relationship. I do think it's a bigger deal this side of the Atlantic than it is the other. And the other story we're going to look at in more detail later in the show, these extraordinary profits enjoyed by BP. I think I gave you the level of profits at the start of the show. It's a vast amount of money. £366 a second is what they're bringing in. And their profits are £2.4 billion. And the chief executive, who's fairly new in post, Meg O'Neill, could be looking at a £13.7 million pay packet this year, including £8 million for reward. Now, profit for me is not a dirty word. I love profit. Profit means that companies can hopefully invest more and employ more staff. But is there a level? This is Michael in Kent saying BP are surely just following the Labour government's example. They're profiteering from Iran. Unlike other governments, they're rubbing their hands in glee, with glee as the money pours in rather than reducing taxes in fuel. Well, we might return to that. But let's move to the story that I have mentioned, an important announcement from the government today, confirming that it will bring forward further reforms to the right to buy scheme. And here with more details is Labour MP, Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary Steve Reid. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it that you and your colleagues and your department are putting forward today? Good morning.
Good to be with you, Nick, as always on your show. Well, what we're doing is we're reforming right to buy to make the system fairer. We're reducing the discount that people will get if they buy their own council home to 15%. And where councils build new homes, they won't be available through right to buy for 35 years. The reason we're doing that is because the current system is stopping councils from building council homes. And you know, and your listeners will know, we have a housing crisis in this country. The number of people sleeping rough on the streets doubled under the previous Conservative government. The number of families living in temporary accommodation doubled to 170,000 families. So we need more council homes to put a roof over people's heads. But councils won't build if they think they're going to be sold off after 2 years, which is what was happening under the previous government. So we're going to retain them as council homes for a minimum of 35 years now. That means we've got more homes to put people in to live.
And just to clarify, the level of discount goes to what a maximum level will it be, Secretary of State?
It'll be 15%. Maximum. So people will still get a discount. They'll need.
So it
to
starts at five, is that right? And then
and it goes up depending on how long that you've been there. That's
I
right.
See.
Now, but you'll need to.
How long do you have
home.
To live there to get the 5% discount?
You need to be there for 10 years now. So you know, previously it was just 2 years. So you could move into a house and 2 years later you could buy it with a big discount. Now that's great for the people that got the home, but it's terrible for those 170,000 families living in temporary accommodation that didn't have anywhere to go and live. So we're trying to make the system fair. I want people to be able to buy their own home, but not at the expense of other families who are left living on the streets or in temporary accommodation. So we're trying to balance it so that we can support both people's aspirations to have somewhere to live and buy their own home later on.
I don't know if it's the correct expression, but are you going to backfill? That is to say, as people purchase their council homes, and it's great home ownership, I'm very fortunate to say that I have it, I'm very fortunate my sons have it, it's a tremendous ambition, but you've got to build more if we're going to sell some of them.
Oh,
isn't
no,
that the
absolutely.
Reality?
Absolutely right there. So what we've done is we've opened up this pot of funding called the Social and Affordable Homes Programme. £39 billion with a B. That will build the biggest increase in social and council housing that we've seen in this country for a generation. And we're already starting to see that come through. So last year, Nick, we built over 10,000 new council homes in this country. That's the biggest amount for 35 years, which is when records began. So we're on our way building those homes. We're rebalancing the system to try and make it fairer and get people off the streets and into a secure home.
We will soon approach the second anniversary of you and your colleagues coming to power as a Labour government. With that eye-watering pledge to build 1.5 million homes, how are we doing so far?
Well, as of this month, 342,000 homes have been built. Now, you would expect in this Parliament the number of homes to be to get built to go up.
I'm going to win my bet,
end.
Aren't I?
You're
I
not.
Had a bet with £100 of money to a homeless shelter that if you don't hit that target of 1.5, you give me 100 or I'll give you 100. 342,000, almost 2 years in, you should be nearer 600,000, Secretary of State.
Well, I'm looking forward to you losing your money, Nick. But you, what's really happening here is it took time to get the new planning laws through. You can't just announce it. There's a process in Parliament. The Planning and Infrastructure Act came into force at the beginning of this year. I've changed a whole set of regulations called the National Planning Policy Framework this spring as well. That's only just now coming into force. Of course, we've got the war in the Middle East. That has made things a little bit more difficult, but we're still seeing, as of this month, starts, spades in the grounds are up 15%. All so right. We're going to keep going and you are going to lose your money.
All right. we shall see. We shall see. In other matters as regards housing, it was suggested yesterday the Chancellor's looking at a rent freeze for landlords in England for 12 months. Can you confirm or deny that policy, Secretary?
I saw the report and it isn't correct. As the housing secretary, I've ruled this out multiple times, including a couple of weeks ago.
Was she ever considering it, to your knowledge?
House of Commons. I don't know where the report comes from, Nick. Is the truth of it? I'd like to find out.
Okay.
But I've ruled this out. But the reason is, if I can give you the reason, because it sounds good on the face of things, doesn't it? But when they tried this in Scotland, the SNP Green government, when they were in coalition, tried this. It led to the biggest increase in rents that they'd seen because landlords, afraid that their rents would be capped when people moved out, whacked up the rents much more than they would have done otherwise, and people ended up paying through the nose. So we don't want to be putting people's rents up at a time when there's a cost of living crisis. That would be crazy.
Last couple of minutes together, a couple of other matters. You're probably aware of the extraordinary profits enjoyed by BP, as announced yesterday.
Yeah.
£3.2 billion, up from £1.4 billion the previous year, more than doubled. In a social media post, your colleague Ed Miliband wrote, "Profiting from a crisis is morally and economically wrong." Is he right?
Of course he's right, yeah. I heard that figure yesterday when I was coming into work. So I heard the figure on the radio. No, absolutely staggering, to be honest, when everybody is struggling with the cost of living crisis, but particularly the cost of petrol at the pumps.
But I thought you were going to crack down on profiteering. I've heard that from both the Chancellor and the Prime Minister. And clearly these figures appear during the Iran conflict. So how come they can do it? Where's the crackdown?
Well, that's why we have the windfall tax. And I think Ed Miliband, who's the relevant Secretary of State, said yesterday, we have the windfall tax and it will apply. So, you know, we won't just be letting these big corporations profit from the war. They will be hit
by... Why has he taken the post down then?
I didn't know he had taken the post
down. Yes, he subsequently... I wonder if it's because, of course, BP is a UK-listed company. Is it right for the British government to go after UK-listed companies the size of BP that they're morally and economically wrong, Secretary of State?
The windfall tax exists, and we brought it in because you have the energy companies, the oil companies, making profits way in excess of what they were anticipating doing. I think it's right to claw the excess profit back, not their normal profits, and then use that to help people with the cost of living crisis. That's why one of the reasons people have just seen £100 cut in their energy bills this month.
Two of the top five oil companies in the world are listed here in the United Kingdom. Should we have a government that's hostile to them? Talk about one of them being morally and economically wrong?
No, it's not being hostile to energy companies to put a windfall tax. If they're making profits that are way above their own expectations, then families are facing a cost of living crisis. I think it's right to use those excess profits to support families through difficult times.
Lastly, more than a month ago, the Prime Minister Keir Starmer said that we would go after Russia's shadow fleet if it came through. And you're probably aware that it is thought that it's bringing billions of pounds worth of oil in that time to fund the illegal war in Ukraine. The Ukraine's foreign minister has pointed out that in that time, France has seized four vessels. How many have the United Kingdom seized?
I don't know the answer to
zero.
I don't know the answer.
Zero.
Well, you know the answer to that.
I know the answer. So let's come at this a different way. Yes. Why has France seized four and the United Kingdom zero after the Prime Minister said we would, quote, go after the shadow fleet? Is it because we don't have any Royal Navy vessels that can do it?
Well, we do have Royal Navy vessels. I mean, we saw recently, didn't we, there was that situation where there were Russian submarines over some very vital cables off the coast of Scotland. They didn't know that we were observing and watching them, but we were tracking what they were doing, making sure that they weren't causing harm to vital infrastructure in this country. But I don't know all the operational details.
But it's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? As Vladislav Valusik points out from Ukraine, France can seize four. The British Prime Minister says we will go after the shadow fleet, and we've not seized one.
We will go after the shadow fleet,
well,
but, you know...
Secretary of State.
No, it is. Well, let's wait and see what happens. I don't know the operational details about what's being tracked where and when this will happen, but we certainly have the resources there to do it. We have eyes on the Russians that the Russians were not aware of. If they had known we were watching them, they wouldn't have been over the cables where they were, but we were tracking every single move. We'll be tracking that shadow fleet, and when time is appropriate, action will be taken.
Grateful for your time as ever. The right to buy overhauls, safeguard social housing, and how those percentages will work to allow for that discount. And backfilling, of course, with more building, as outlined by Steve Reid, Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government. Thank you for your time, Mr. Reid. 1 minute after 8, LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, King Charles has told Congress the UK-US relationship is more important than ever.
From the bitter divisions of 250 years ago, we forged a friendship that has grown into one of the most consequential alliances in human history. I pray with all my heart that our alliance will continue to defend our shared values with our partners in Europe and the Commonwealth and across the world.
He gave a speech to US lawmakers to mark the end of the first full day of his state visit. It was met with vigorous applause and standing ovations. The King and Queen then went on to attend a state dinner at the White House. Donald Trump spoke warmly about the UK during his toast.
Ours is a treasured friendship, an eternal bond, and a true story of extraordinary heroism and skill. History has known no more powerful force than the combination of American patriotism and British pride.
The US president also claimed the king agrees with him that Iran should not have access to nuclear weapons. Sir Starmer has seen off an attempt to open a parliamentary inquiry into the Lord Mandelson vetting row. MPs voted against a motion to put the Prime Minister in front of the Privileges Committee last night. A study has found better care for women in the UK could prevent 10,000 miscarriages a year. Researchers say people should be given follow-up tests after their first loss. Professor Ari Kumarasamy directs miscarriage research for the charity Tommy's.
They have to wait until they have three miscarriages before they would get care to understand why they might have had a miscarriage, what investigations might be useful, and what treatment could help them. So they would have to wait for three miscarriages before they are taken seriously by the health services. And what we are saying is that that is thoroughly unacceptable.
Former FBI Director James Comey has been charged with threatening the life of Donald Trump. It's over an image he briefly shared on social media. He denies the allegations. A study has found obesity is an important driver of rising cancer rates in people under 50. The rate of 11 types of cancer, including ovarian and bowel, has increased in younger adults over the past two decades. Scientists say it's in line with rising obesity. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 10,332 after closing up 11 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a cold and sunny start for most of the UK, warming up later though with highs of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next
Mom!
Time.
Mum!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
25 minutes after 8 on Wednesday the 29th of April. Coming up in this hour, the US special relationship is probably Israel, says our new man in Washington. Rather poor timing, but is he actually speaking to something that in truth is right? Plus, what exactly are the details of the so-called social media ban for under-16s? Outlined briefly here, Education Minister Olivia Bailey.
To put beyond any doubt, we are placing a clear statutory requirement that the Secretary of State must, rather than may, act following the consultation.
Plus, as it's predicted, the UK's population is projected to peak more than 40 years earlier, 72 million by 2054. Have we got enough housing? As we've discussed just now with the Housing Secretary, and we'll come back to some of his comments, but what about the fact of the illegal arrivals and, indeed, cracking down on migration, as addressed by Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood a couple of months ago?
I'm looking very closely at not just illegal migrants into our country, but legal migration as well, to make sure it's done in a way that retains public confidence. It means that we can deal with the pace of change.
Plus, when profit is a dirty word, bumper profits, extraordinary profits by BP, surely profiteering. So why no government action? That's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, whoever holds the position of ambassador in Washington seems to have a minefield, don't they? The current one has said that America's only special relationship is probably Israel, not the UK, in remarks that risk embarrassing and undoing some of the good work pulled off by King Charles during the royal visit to the US. The leaked comments were published by the Financial Times. Here is Sir Christian Turner, the ambassador, speaking about the state of the special relationship. He took office in February to replace disgraced Peter Mandelson as our most senior diplomat in Washington, and indeed, it has to be said, it is the prime ambassadorial post the United Kingdom give out. He was speaking privately with a group of students visiting the US in the month he was appointed.
Special relationship is a phrase I try not to utter, because it's quite nostalgic, it's quite backwards looking, and it has a lot of sort of baggage about it. I think there is probably one country that has a special relationship with the United States, and that's probably Israel. My advice to my Prime Minister is I can't just sit down with my hands on my ears and say it's special, it's going to be fine. We're going to work really pleased to see what we, the UK, bring to the table.
to Ben Judah, who's well-schooled in diplomatic circles. He was a special advisor to David Lammy during his, Mr. Lammy's time as Foreign Secretary. He was involved in high-level talks in Washington with Sir Christian Turner. And indeed, he wrote in the Times in February, Sir Christian Turner is, quotes, a diplomat so smooth, I suspect he could slip out of handcuffs. Ben Judah joins me now. Diplomatic slip here, though. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. Obviously, it's a slip, and obviously, it's an embarrassing moment. But what Dr. Christian Turner is saying is obviously true. I think that most members of the Cabinet agree with it. And, you know, let's just break it down a little bit. There's a special relationship between people, between British people and American people, between British business and American business. There's a specialist relationship which very few other countries have, and really we're the ones that have the closest specialist relationship between MI6 and the CIA, between our intelligence services and surveillance services. But in terms of what the British public think is the special relationship is, that we get some kind of political special relationship with special access and special favours, and the Americans help us out, that's not really true. And
should we be concerned of about the closeness between the United States and Israel, Ben?
I think that the last special relationship that the Americans have with Israel is actually fast coming to an end. And I think that after Trump, whether it's a Republican leader or a Democratic leader, the United States is going to be much more coercive towards Israel, and is going to be much more sort of diffident towards Israel than it is now. And I think that the pattern that the United States has adopted to all its other allies will catch up with Israel before too long.
And as we see that relationship going forward, does Israel effectively drag the United States along behind it on occasions?
I think that the United States has been persuaded by Israel on occasions in the Middle East that it's in American interest to follow it into military endeavours and military campaigns. And that has not always been in the UK interest. You know, the war that Trump and Netanyahu launched against Iran is not been in our interest economically and geostrategically, because it patently hasn't succeeded in its objectives, which explains the sort of Cold War-style situation that we now have in the Gulf of Hormuz.
You praise Sir Christian's diplomacy, but you'll be aware that the Financial Times reported that he, the ambassador, answered questions on the Epstein scandal and the contrast in how it played out on the either side of the Atlantic, saying it was extraordinary to brought down a senior member of the royal family, a British ambassador to Washington, potentially the Prime Minister, and yet here in the US, it really hasn't touched anybody. There's no diplomacy there, is there?
So, one thing I will say is that the Foreign Office can be a bit lackadaisical when it comes to taking away people's phones when you enter an embassy or when you enter the building. If you go into number 10, your phone's taken away from you right away.
Yep.
And it's not just because of security, could the Russians be listening, et cetera, et cetera. It's because you don't want scamps or activists recording officials sharing their private views and their private analysis. Foreign Office has got to get much stricter with this. If you're going to be having a meeting in King Charles Street, as the headquarters is called, or in the embassy, phones have got to be taken away at the door, and not just in a highly classified area.
Ben Judas, former special advisor to David Lammy, thank you. You're involved in talks in Washington with Sir Christian Turner. I should tell you the Foreign Office said of Sir the ambassador's remarks, quotes, these were private and formal comments made to a group of UK sixth form students visiting the US in early February. They are certainly not any reflection of the UK government's position. Sir Christian Turner has not responded to the FT request for comment. To Nicholas Westcott, who's Professor of Practice in Diplomacy at SOAS, University of London, and a former British diplomat. Professor, how would you grade the ambassador's diplomatic skills in this one? Good morning.
Good morning. It's always a challenge. As a diplomat, you have to meet a very wide range of people. You can't always ask them to hand over their phones before you go. And Christian Turner perhaps made the failed judgment of trusting a group of British sixth formers. I think he was not expecting them to record his message and leak it to the press. So he was yes, caught unawares. As a diplomat, whoever you meet, you try and tell them the truth. You try and give them an honest answer. And I think Christian Turner was doing that. Had he thought he was speaking to a journalist, he would have measured his words a bit better. As he was talking to students, trying to tell them what diplomatic life is like, he was straightforward and honest. So to some extent, he was his confidence was betrayed, if you like. And it's a pity if ambassadors feel they can't meet students anymore because they can't trust them.
Should we have a level of concern of the relationship between the United States and Israel? How healthy is it for the rest of us on the planet?
That's a very good question. And to some extent, there is a special relationship between the US and every other country in the world, because the US is remains the greatest power in the world. So everybody has quite a special relationship, whether it's a turbulent one like South Africa or a very close one like Israel and to some extent the UK. The phrase "the special relationship" is really an albatross around the neck. Everybody measures it against who has the special relationship with the US. If you ask, who does Trump speak to most often amongst world leaders? It's probably Netanyahu. If you ask who has the greatest influence on Trump's foreign policy, it's probably Mr. Netanyahu at the moment. It's not always been like that. Under Mr. Obama, there was a very frosty period in relations with Israel. At the moment, it is extremely close. They're fighting a war together, hand in glove. And who has any influence on Mr. Netanyahu? Only Mr. Trump. So, yes, there is a special relationship between the US and Israel.
And is that is that what we've seen play out with the Iran conflict?
Absolutely. As far as we can tell, it was Mr. Netanyahu who persuaded Trump, now is the time to go in and let's take out the leadership.
So can I make the point it's not that healthy then for the rest of us living on this planet? If you'll allow that the Iran conflict appears to have no end in sight and very little strategy at the outset, it's not particularly healthy, this friendship relationship between Israel and the US. Professor?
You're quite right. And Mr. Trump, in some ways, took that decision, went into that war against the advice of some of his closest advisors, although they were a bit reluctant to tell him. But it was quite clear that J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, the chief of the defense staff, all had serious hesitations about starting this war. But they do what the commander-in-chief tells them. And I think they have been proven right, and Trump and Netanyahu have been proved wrong about what the consequences would be.
Professor, thank you for your time. Nicholas Westcott, Professor of Practice in Diplomacy at SOAS, University of London, and a former British diplomat. So that relationship, special one, between the US and Israel has resulted in the Iran conflict. It is the closest relationship in the views of the British ambassador, but what does it mean for the rest of the world? Plus, coming back to the UK, a social media ban or restrictions for under 16 seem to be closer. Bridget Phillipson, Education Secretary, told me yesterday,
people do want assurance that we're committed to delivering change. We absolutely are, but I do recognise that there are sincerely held views amongst campaigners as to how we do this and make it work, and that's what we're determined to achieve.
And more on that after this. The 8:16 LBC News headlines are read by Lottie Morley.
King Charles has told Congress the UK-US relationship is more important than ever. Sir Keir Starmer has seen off an attempt to open a parliamentary inquiry into the Lord Mandelson vetting row. And a study has found better care for women in the UK could prevent 10,000 miscarriages a year. LBC weather, a cold and sunny start for most across the UK, warming up later with highs of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M1 southbound from Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead to the M25, where the exit slip road to the M25 clockwise is still closed following an accident. It's also causing delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 20 at Kings Langley and on the surrounding routes like the A41 and the A405. Also on the M25, but on the southern stretch, it's very busy from Junction 2 at the A2 to Junction 3 at the M20, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. On the north Circular Road, there are delays southbound to the Redbridge roundabout at the A12. It's slow from the M11, and that's because a van's broken down. And on the trains, Chiltern Railways are at a standstill northbound at West Ruislip.
This is LBC.
At TUI, we give you more. More outfit choices, with 20 kilograms of luggage allowance as standard. More hotels, built around what you love, like that swim-up suite. More race you to the bottom, water parks on site. More, ooh, that looks good, food options, from poolside snacks to a la carte dining. Book on app, in-store or online. You book it, TUI sort it. Atoll and Abta protected. T's and C's apply. Selected hotels only. See website for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more limbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply, 18 plus.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both captain hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern. Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
The ambassador's rather undiplomatic comments concerning the relationship between the United States and Israel, and that's what possibly has led the whole world, or much of the world, into the Iran conflict and the repercussions that we're feeling with the price of petrol and, of course, heating oil and other matters. Derek's in Edgware. Derek, you're on the radio. What do you want to say? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thanks, as always.
Not at all. Thanks for coming on.
Two points. So, first of all, I think on the one hand, it's a rather trivial discussion in the sense of, you know, when we use the word special the whole time, you know,
it's
as
front
children,
page of the Financial Times, Derek. It's quite a big story when the ambassador...
No. If you could just hear me out. On the one hand, it could be regarded as trivial in the sense of, you know, when there's a special relationship, you know, one day and that changes or whatever. On the other hand, it is very serious, okay? Mm. What I find rather alarming, including that's been happening on this show, is that what very often permeates the discussion is that what Israel stands for or represents or its values or its interests are not in unison with Western interests or not in unison with European interests, and that Israel, damn Israel, is responsible for dragging the Western world and the UK and others into an understanding of the world or conflicts within the world that really are trivial and they should not be part of. You know, maybe Israel actually has it right in so many ways, and the rest of the world has it wrong. The reason why, arguably, unsurprisingly, America has a very special relationship with Israel right now is because not since World War II has the U.S. partnered with a country, namely Israel, on such a scale, with such sacrifice, both in terms of people and in terms of financial, than ever before. So it's no surprise that they have extremely special relationships with Israel.
There was Kosovo, of course, the Kosovo conflict. I think we have to remember.
Yeah, but nothing can compare in terms of this conflict and the intertwined relationship and the amount of aircraft and weapons and so forth and sacrifice that have gone into this conflict. You know, the UK often says, at least the Prime Minister says, that the war is not in the UK's interest. And I would argue, really, it's not in the UK's interest to destroy at source, you know, radical Islam that permeates into Europe. It's not in the UK's interest to destroy...
Derek, you're never going to destroy Islam, Derek.
Sorry? Not destroying Islam. Of course not. Islamist Islam.
Derek, all that happens with radical Islam is that it reinvents itself. It's not going to go away. Look what happened in Afghanistan. I see.
So when we looked at Nazism, we should have said, you know what? We're not going to try and destroy it at its source because, you know what? It's going to regenerate. It's an ideology. It It can't be destroyed. You know what we're going to do like the rest of Europe? We're going to negotiate. We're going to meet. Derek. We're going to discuss. And eventually, you know what?
Okay.
The radical
Derek.
Islam will just go away.
Okay. What is a successful outcome of the Iranian conflict, Derek?
Okay, so that's another point. You know, everybody discusses this conflict in a war that has literally lasted, I don't know, between 6 to 8 weeks and has already come to conclusions, which is absolutely farcical.
So what is a successful outcome?
A successful outcome on many levels is, first of all, that Iran can't get away by just discussing and meeting and so forth, whatever, to avert what they are really after. And this has been going on for decades.
Okay.
Number two, is that Iran is incapable and cannot get a nuclear weapon. Number three is that Iran no longer disrupts the entirety of the Middle East by sponsoring and supporting proxies.
That has to be regime change, does it, Derek?
I can tell you one thing. It's not going to happen the way that European governments were trying to do it.
Okay, that means regime change, presumably, does it, Derek?
It means ultimately regime change.
And do you honestly think that we're going to get regime change in Iran?
That is ultimately up to the Iranian people.
How? When they try and revolt or they have uprisings, they're murdered in the streets.
So what should we do?
You're the one who's prosecuting for this war, and I'm asking what a successful outcome looks. And I don't think
I'm not a magician, yeah, I don't know. But my hope is that when the war dies down to an extent, that ultimately, hopefully, the Iranian people, okay, will rise up. Because it's only...
They've done it already, and they around 30,000 possibly got murdered.
Yes, absolutely. But the point is this. As we all know, right now, the Iranian regime, right, has stopped the availability of the internet. People can't communicate and so forth. Eventually, that is going to stop. And people are going to realize exactly what has happened.
Derek, interesting views. Thank you for your input. Not necessarily agreeing with much of it. Alf in Halifax, the UK-US special relationship, at last someone has spoken the truth. Next time Trump mentions it, he ought to be corrected. The only special relationship with him is the man in the mirror. And I don't mean the newspaper, that's Alf. Let's come to other matters, we will take more of your views on that. And this idea of this social media restriction or bans, and exactly where we find ourselves. Here's Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson speaking with me about that yesterday.
We've been clear last night and, you know, on many occasions before, that we want to protect young people from the harms that they can experience online. Some of those addictive features, you know, the fact that young people spend so long on social media these days. And I know this is a real worry to parents. So
yes. My
message is that change is coming. We just want to make sure that we get this right.
Well, last night it was revealed that children under 16 will either be blocked from social media or face new curbs after a last-minute climb down. The concession announced after parliamentary battle by Lord Nash, who's appeared on this programme on a number of occasions. He's the former Conservative Education Minister, to force a full ban within 12 months. How exactly will it work? Andy Burrows, Chief Executive of the Molly Rose Foundation. Good to have you on. Andy, can you tell us, first of all, what is the latest parliamentary step towards this and where do you think it will go next? Andy, good morning.
It does now look like the parliamentary machinations have wrapped up, and so we will wait to see what the government does in terms of its next steps. We very much welcome the government's commitment now to take decisive action. Parents, frankly, I think listening to this show this morning will be fed up that it has taken so long to get ministers to act. But what needs to happen now is that the government needs to act, yes, decisively, but it needs to act in a way that parents can have confidence that whatever measures are brought forward will actually work. And for us, that means, yes, go ahead and ban the addictive design features, ban the harmful design features that cost the life of Molly Russell, that monetize and exploit children's time every day across this country, but do not go ahead with a flawed ban that, as we can see in Australia, is going to unravel and only offer parents a false sense of safety.
Andy, why is it not working in Australia?
Well, our polling shows that 3 in 5 children under 16 in Australia who are using social media are still able to do so. They still have active accounts. Half of kids say that the ban hasn't made them feel any safer. 1 in 7 kids actually say they feel less safe. as a result. This is because the tech platforms simply are not complying. They are not doing the age checks in the first place. And I think that is really striking because, look, proponents of the ban have said this is a decisive fire break. We can't wait for evidence. We can't wait to see how Australia rolls out. But even when this is one of the signature policies of the Albanese government over there, the tech companies are still not following the rules. And I think the message here is whether we're talking about a ban, whether we're talking about, as we think needs to happen, really turbocharging regulation, until you are prepared to take on some of the largest, most cash-rich companies in the world, and for us that means doing what we did with banks after the 2008 crash, then we can't expect different results. The tech companies will drag their heels when it comes to complying.
So what do you understand will happen next here in the UK, Andy?
So the consultation has another few weeks to run. The government has previously said that they will make decisions before the summer. And so now we will wait to see whether they do go down the road of a flawed ban, or they instead go down the route of banning addictive features. What I think they should be doing, though, Nick, is going much further, because this isn't just a question of access. You know, if we recognise that kids will find a way around restrictions, we need to make sure that we fundamentally address the issues of product safety. Because, look, my big concern is if teenagers are still able to use these services, they're still able to use high-risk gaming platforms like Roblox and Discord that, you know, when I look at the harms every day are some of the ones that really keep me up at night, that we see product safety being meaningfully addressed. Because I think, you know, parents will look on with dismay if after all of this pressure, actually what we see is not very much changing and a false sense of safety. We cannot get to a place in a few months' time or in a few years' time where this ban does not deliver, and then proponents of it can simply say it was the wrong type of ban.
So lastly, and a sentence if you can, what is the timeline now as regards implementation in the UK?
We'll see decisions taken in the summer, but we would be looking at many months at least, I suspect, before then that translates into material action that parents can see and feel.
Goodness me. Andy, thank you. Andy Burrows, your chief executive of the Molly Rose Foundation, of course, named after Molly Rose Russell. Mary, you'll be a caller on that, but I hope you can take to the other side of the news, because we do need to get to the news headlines, and also the other side of the news, a story that I've already addressed at the moment, the extraordinary and burgeoning population of the United of the United Kingdom. We're going to be way ahead with the numbers. 72 million, 40 years earlier than was at first predicted. Have we got enough housing? Do we have enough checks on migration? Addressed by Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood in December.
To settle in this country forever is not a right, but a privilege, and it must be earned. Today, that is not the case.
Think of the part of the country in which you live, if you're in a town, or even if you're in a city or a sleepy village. 72 million by 2054. Have we got enough room? Roads? Hospitals? Doctors? Schools? And what about the defence of all those people? We'll pick up on that as well. Mary will be the caller on social media first up. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time, Lottie Morley.
The King has made a speech in front of US lawmakers, highlighting the important relationship between Britain and America. Charles spoke in front of Congress on the first full day of his state visit to the US. Sir Keir Starmer has seen off an attempt to open a parliamentary inquiry into the Lord Mandelson vetting row. MPs voted against a motion to put the Prime Minister in front of the Privileges Committee. And offering better testing after a miscarriage in the UK could prevent 10,000 losses a year. The pregnancy charity Tommy's says the current care leaves families unsupported. LBC weather, sunshine for most of the UK this morning, feeling warm with highs of 21.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
Morgan McSweeney gets a grilling from a parliamentary committee. Has he helped Starmer or hurt Starmer?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
a box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on, and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip
weight
is,
loss? I
no, forget that.
Never,
you just
have to keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear
advice, 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 advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:33, more on that population boom projected to peak more than 40 years earlier than previously predicted. And we'll get more on that in a moment. But Mary's in Hounslow to talk about social media. Well, we're getting closer, but as we heard from someone who's really at the coalface of this, we're still months away from anything actually being enforced. Mary, your take on that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think it's very silly, them trying to ban it. Kids are very smart. They always find a way to go around. I have three boys. They're not allowed to go on WhatsApp, the first two, because they're 16 and 13. But they're also talking to their friends all the time in other ways. And whenever I say, leave your iPad, go outside, they say, it's raining. What am I going to go outside and do? You know? So give alternatives. Give after-school clubs. Give the money to school so they can have after-school activities. Social clubs. You have to give an alternative before you take away something that keeps them busy.
I hear
it's
what
very
you say,
simple.
But at their fingertips, they've effectively got the whole of the world that they can dive into, haven't they? That's a pretty attractive proposition. And then, if you will allow, and it has been proven that some of these companies actually put in products or put parts of their product to make them addictive, which is feeding the part of the brain that young people feel they can't live without. I don't want to be demeaning here. Saying that you can all go down to the village hall and play table tennis is not really going to cut it, is it?
No, it's not going to cut it. It's going to need hard work. But stop it saying they're banned. But kids are very smart. They know how to go around about. How about making those big companies
but dozens of children
give money
taken,
to do of, other ways?
But Mary, dozens of children have taken their lives about after
dozens
seeing
of children
content
because
online.
There's no safeguarding on the bad things. How about taking the money from the big companies and having people at school, like my children's school, they have somebody who talks to them weekly and says to them, what is the problem? What is the issue? Kids don't approach people and talk to them about their problems,
no.
Especially their parents.
Yeah.
But if they have somebody they can talk to, maybe they can vent out that way. But there's no money to give to schools, to teachers, to help them. So they don't have these kind of people. I think they're looking at it the silly way, just like when mums and parents go to their kids, stop doing this, stop doing that. That's not the way. You need to find a smarter way to reach the kids, not banning them. That's not very smart at all.
But how do you tell a child, if they're, to use an example, that they want to run across the road? Surely you tell them not to run across the road.
Yes, but this is not as simple as that. You know, there are good things on the internet as well. So they'll say, Mum, I need to do my homework online. You're banning me, but I've got to do other stuff.
But isn't lastly the very point that they go online, and I understand in some classes now, obviously it's a long time since I was in a class, but
yeah.
In some classes they actually be online and need to be online to answer the questions, to do the work. So we have to have, obviously, restrictions, surely.
Yes, some form of restrictions. But what I'm saying, if something is very exciting and they want to know about it, kids will know about it. There are platforms where my children go on and they can chat to their friends, even though I don't want them to, because I want them to do their homework. They're not going to, you know, they will bypass this. They will have a way. What about making other things seem more lucrative, you know, more exciting for them and get them into that? And kids do want to play together. Kids want to do other stuff. But it's because they don't have the means. They just decide to go for the easiest.
Mary, good luck raising those sons. Thank you for your input. We'll take more calls on that. But I did mention before the news we'll be looking at the population predictions or projections. And it is now thought that we'll be at 72.5 million, actually, by 2054. That's 40 years ahead of earlier predictions. Or past predictions, I'm sorry, 40 years earlier than past predictions. We're currently at around 70 million. If you look around your town, your village, your high street, have we got room for 2.5 million more people? What about the hospitals, the roads, the jobs, the water? Have we got the infrastructure to take it? Now, as we learned this, I spoke in the first hour to Housing Secretary Steve Reid about the homes, whether we're building enough houses to keep up with the increase, and specifically how the government's doing on that target to build 1.5 million new homes over the course of this Parliament.
Well, as of this month, 342,000 homes have been built. Now, you would expect in this Parliament the number of homes to be to get built to go up.
I'm going to win my bet,
end.
Aren't I?
You're
I
not.
Had a bet with £100 of money to a homeless shelter that if you don't hit that target of 1.5, you give me 100 or I'll give you 100. 342,000, almost 2 years in, you should be near at 600,000, Secretary of State.
Well, I'm looking forward to you losing your money, Nick. But you, what's really happening here is it took time to get the new planning laws through. You can't just announce it. There's a process in Parliament. The Planning and Infrastructure Act came into force at the beginning of this year. I've changed a whole set of regulations called the National Planning Policy Framework this spring as well. That's only just now coming into force. Of course, we've got the war in the Middle East. That has made things a little bit more difficult, but we're still seeing, as of this month, starts, spades in the grounds are up 15%. Right. So we're going to keep going and you are going to lose your money.
Well, we'll see. Andrew Tettenborn is a writer and academic. Can the United Kingdom take this increase in population at this level? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, my feeling is that there are certainly going to be serious problems. The obvious ones, homes, water, infrastructure, energy, for that matter. What I find rather worrying is that we get presented with this as a fait accompli. Mm-hmm. You know, it is going to happen. Now, if we live in a democracy, this is something which should be the subject of debate and which in the end ought to be the subject of democratic decision. And there's a little bit much of people just saying, well, it's going to happen whether we want it or not. That's not the way that we ought to be running things. What also worries me is that the kind of people who make this prediction and say, well, we must just live with it, tends to be the persons who are unaffected or relatively unaffected by these changes. MPs are reasonably well established. They live in decent houses in decent areas.
Still need hospitals, Andrew. And their children still need schools, of course.
They do, but let's say they've got slightly more money, they've got slightly better facilities. They are much less likely to be affected than the just about managing at the edges of our cities who are really going to be the people who are affected. What we need is a popular debate. It's all very well saying immigration is good. To some extent, that's right. Some immigration is good. But I think we need a popular debate taking in everybody and not simply the influencers, the politicians, the great and the good.
And where ultimately should that take us, that discussion or conversation that we have, Andrew?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert in the amount of land we have, the ability to service an increased population with things like water and energy. I have a horrible feeling that there's a limit to the population that we can service, and that's something which ought to be made very well known to the people of this country as a whole.
Andrew Tettenborn, writer and academic, thank you for that. Hayden says, discussions about our population when we're heading to what is going to be a global depression feels like you're almost preparing the nation for mass casualties. Brad's in Portsmouth. Brad, have you got room in Portsmouth for extra more people? Good morning.
Good morning. No, and I think a key point that needs to be made here is a news article came out this morning on the BBC to say the UK is expecting more deaths than births from this year onwards going forward. So where's this population increase coming from? I mean, it's entirely immigration.
And the projection is that there will be 7.3 million immigrants coming to this country in the 10-year period from 2024 to 2034, is the projection.
And with that, how many more houses are Labour planning on building?
Well, they want to get to 1.5 million in their lifetime, and that's a five-year parliamentary term. They're approaching their second. That would need 300,000 a year, and they're at 342 as they approach the end of year two. So, now, Steve Reid is saying that's because all the necessary planning measures have to be put in and the apparatus that allows more houses to be built. Really, they've only just crawled over where they need to be on year one, so I don't think they're going to get there.
But even if you give them the benefit of the doubt, even if they build 1.5 million new homes within the next, 3 years left, if you're bringing in an additional 7 million immigrants,
yep,
you're not going to be helping the current population that are struggling to find houses. The whole point of them building more houses is that there's currently a housing shortage. If you bring in an additional 7 million more migrants, you're going to make that housing supply even more scarce.
And I also think it's worth saying it's not fair for those who are already living here, and it's not fair for those who legally want to make their way to this country, because we're not going to be able to provide the sort of lifestyle that they probably hope they would get when they get where they would have when they got here.
Yeah, and if you're increasing your population, an additional 7 million is over 10%. You're going to be losing some of the culture that is left in the country, but just from a sheer portion of the population that's here.
No, I know exactly. I see exactly how you go through the figures. Brad, thank you. Let's have a good day down in Portsmouth. Jane in Cromer, who will pay for this large population? We already have more benefit outgoings and tax coming in. If the government keeps going, it's likely to get even worse. The same subject, this comes in. Kevin wants to make, not every immigrant needs a single house. No, I understand that, but there is an enormous pressure, as Brad was outlining there. Sean, Ian, where are you? In Hartford. We can't even look after the population we have now. There's your answer. And lastly, this one comes in from John. This is a disastrous set of figures, but it needs to be said that both governments, I think you might mean both parties, but both parties have contributed to this through their policies. There has not been the necessary checks, and the current idea of sending tens of millions of pounds to France, I think you mean hundreds of millions, actually, to France to try and control this problem is a joke. This situation will only get worse, and no one seems to want to act on it. All right, we'll continue to take your calls on that. We're also talking social media. Matt, you will be a caller on that. It would appear it's going to need yet more consultation, but it looks as though we might be somewhere by the end of the year. Matt, you'll be commenting on that. And then in the next hour, we need to have a conversation about the P word, as in profits. Can they be morally and economically wrong? Ed Miliband says they are for BP. Housing Secretary Steve Reid told me in the first hour.
Of course he's right, yeah. I heard that figure yesterday when I was coming into work. So I heard the figure on the radio. No, absolutely staggering, to be honest.
So if he's right, why has Mr. Miliband taken down that social media post? Is there a row going on over there? BP, of course, a UK-listed company. Matt, you'll be on social media. More calls on that. 8:45, LBC News Headlines. Lottie Morley.
The King has told Congress that the alliance between the UK and US is more important than ever. Sir Keir Starmer has survived a vote calling for him to face parliamentary inquiry over the Peter Mandelson vetting row. And researchers say earlier testing could prevent thousands of miscarriages in the UK every year. LBC weather, a cold start for most of us with some foggy patches, clearing up to leave sunny spells later with a high of 21.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 southbound from Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead down to the M25 junction. It's because the exit slip road to the M25 clockwise remains closed. It's also causing delays on the M25 anti-clockwise and on the surrounding routes. The A405 through St Albans is extremely busy, as is the A41. Now, also on the M25, it's slow clockwise at Junction 2 at the A2, heading towards 3 at the M20, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. Delays on the north circular road southbound to the A12 after a van broke down. That's been recovered now. On the trains, Chiltern Railway services are suspended northbound between West Ruislip and High Wycombe after a train broke down.
LBC.
3, 2, sun. EasyJet's big orange sale is now on, with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights, sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 on charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's
my weight loss.
Weight loss?
Forget that.
You just keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before 9, a couple of active conversations going at the moment. One is about the figures, the rather concerning figures, 72.5 million by 2054, 40 years ahead of earlier predictions, 7.3 of whom will come to this country in the 10-year period up to 2034. Well, for those of us living here, of course we're aware of it. Imagine if you come here and you come to a country where we haven't got enough houses, which is true. In many instances, we've got pretty poor public transport, which I'm afraid in parts of this country is true. We don't have enough hospitals, which I'm afraid is true. We don't have enough jobs. Remember, there's nearly a million young people in this country, most of whom I think were probably born here. They can't get jobs, they can't get in NEETs, not in employment, education or training. And I've not even talked about the water, the quality of the water. Are we really set fit to cope with all of that? Talk more about that with Farhad. But Matt in Reading, talking about social media, and we're inching towards this ban. Should the government be... Is it moving in the right direction? And if so, should it be moving a bit quicker? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Great show.
Thank you.
So I'm a father of three. I've got an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old, and we're talking through this at the moment in terms of phone access.
Right.
But I think there's a question around parents and allowing children to have unfettered access to phones. There's a huge amount of pressure on parents from children to have phones, but I think drawing those boundaries to say, no, you can't have access to this until you're older, is a really clear point that parents need to do. And I think the social media ban is a good idea, but I think there's a lot of responsibility that sits on parents to just have really clear boundaries to stop access.
Can I ask you, the 5, 8 and 10, boys and girls, what have we got? If we start at the 5-year-old...
We've got girl who's 5, boy who's 8, girl who's 10. So we're just starting to look at secondary schools.
And what pressure are you getting from the 10-year-old girl to have a mobile phone?
The classic pressure around half my class have got phones, and what about when I start to go to secondary school and all of those sort of things.
And where are you and mother, your wife or your partner, where are you currently on that?
So we've been really clear that any first phone will be a basic phone, so it'll just have phone calls and texts for safety of travelling to a secondary school.
Yep.
There won't be any apps on there. And then she has to prove that she's got evidence of being able to look after her phone. And there's no need for those sorts of things. In year 5, year 6, there's no need for children to have access to any of these things when they're living their lives. So as we've said, by 13 or 14, we'll reassess, and that's the point at which we might allow a smartphone.
And how has that gone down with the young lady?
Fine, I think. I think there's probably two camps of parents. There's ones who've already given their children phones, and there's ones who are pretty against it, and I think pretty clearly looking into the research around social media. But I think it's very much two distinct camps.
I totally agree with what you're doing, but explain why this is a decision you've taken. Is it about the fear of what's online, what your daughter could access?
Absolutely. And I think there was some research done around access to several of the apps, but how fast, within seven clicks on, I think, on one of the fast video sharing apps, you can get onto content which is inappropriate. And so my wife and I, we don't have Instagram, we don't have TikTok. We then also don't want our children to have access to those sorts of things because it's, it, as you said earlier, it's designed to create this addiction, and it is just almost a black hole which you can't then escape from very easily.
Two questions. What should the government be doing then, and what should the internet companies be doing?
I think the government needs to really be clear. I think one very good thing that's been suggested is banning phones in schools, and I think that will probably happen or is happening. Mm-hmm. But I think that helps. But I think there probably needs to be some kind of awareness campaign for parents just to really make it clear that these sorts of things are not appropriate for children, and the damage they cause in terms of anxiety, in terms of social pressures and bullying. We received a message last year about children in year five having bullying on WhatsApp, and we just couldn't believe it because we didn't have access to any of those groups. But these are 9 year olds with access to groups with horrible messages flying around.
Lastly, the 10 year old, when will she be allowed a phone with WhatsApp and a more enabled mobile phone?
Probably 13 or 14, once we're kind of at that more independent stage. And I think she's very happy with, we've been really clear with her about the reasons why. And I think once you've had that open conversation, I think generally children are pretty amenable to understanding the why.
Best of luck. What about the young man, by the way? Is he looking 2 years' time? He'll want one, presumably, won't he?
I think he'll just follow whatever happens.
Oh, God bless him. Look after the three. Loved our conversation, Matt. Best wishes to all three of them, and, of course, to your wife and everyone else. Let's talk about this increase in figures. Is there room? 72.5 million, it feels, in some places. The country feels pretty full at the moment. Farhad in Morden. What would you say, Farhad? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think the figure 7 million is a bit misleading because in the same period, we've got 5 million people emigrating out of the country.
Yes.
So the difference is only 2 million. It's not 7 million.
Yes.
And the other thing is, for the first time, we will have a fifth of our population who will be retired. That's the first time it's happened that there will be more older people than younger, the kids.
Right.
So who's going to pay for their pensions? So it's only 2 million coming, not 7 million. So the difference is only 2 million.
It's 7 million coming and 5 million going.
So the difference is only 2 million. So that's very misleading when we say 7 million, because we have to look at the difference. So the same migrants are moving out, and then the other migrants are coming in, they're being replaced.
Well, of course, the other thing is the health service we have to save. Fortunately, we have drugs and doctors and clinicians who are keeping us alive longer, which is another aspect. But there's still the question, at 72.5 million, have we got room?
I think, it's just 2 million. So it's not, the figure is not, that's not what we really need to look at. Over the next 10 years, the difference is only 2 million.
But you say that, Farhad, but we haven't got enough homes at the moment. We certainly haven't got enough hospitals. I don't think the roads are particularly good. And I haven't even mentioned the railways yet, or jobs.
Yeah, but 2 million people are going to take...
But had 2 million... No, we've got 1 million kids who aren't in work, Farhad. Why would you want to add to that number?
Unfortunately, we don't have a choice. Who's going to be paying for their pensions?
Well, if you're not in work, what, those million kids who aren't in work, they're not paying towards pensions. We are. They're on benefits. We're paying for them.
No, but the immigrants that come in, Labour's made it so hard now. They've got to pay about £5,000-6,000 towards NHS costs and costs. And I've got family who've come in.
I know you do. Well, sorry, I don't know. And I know one does. Yes.
Yeah, so they're contributing towards that. And now they're not staying very long. A lot of these migrants, after 4 years, 3 years, they're moving back out.
I get your economic argument, but you honestly think the country's got enough jobs and hospitals and even water and homes?
And I know you're going to say it's only 2 million. They will create more jobs by coming. But
how will they create more jobs?
We've had in the past where we've had migrants coming in, say students coming in, and that's just helped the economy.
Right.
And 2 million is a small figure for 10 years.
All right. Well, okay. Let's see if others agree with where we are currently. Farhad, thank you. You break the numbers down absolutely correctly. But have we got room for another 2 million? Again, where you look at certain key requirements. Social media is what's got you talking, though. Amy's in Durham. Amy, how do you think it should be, when it is finally implemented, how should it be implemented? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. I don't have the answer to how it should be implemented. I'm not a lawmaker, but what I the point I wanted to make was, look, I've got a 12-year-old now. Mm. I've managed to keep her off TikTok this long.
Right.
And if the government would, in the interim, they know it's dangerous, so in the interim, issue some guidance. Issue some guidance for parents that says, look, TikTok is 16 plus. This is dangerous for children. They know enough to know that.
Yes.
And that then gives us as parents the ammunition to say to the kids, I'm sorry, kids, the government advised you shouldn't have this, so I'm afraid it's a no.
But would they listen to the government?
That would really help.
Do you think a 12-year-old would?
I would.
No, but would the child,
it's not about whether they would. It's not about whether they would. It's about it's about parents, and it's kind of enabling us to do what we actually want to do. I think a lot.
So if you could say to your daughter, look, darling, it's against the law, then that would really strengthen your hand, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. It would strengthen my hand. Absolutely. So it's about enabling the parents to actually put these boundaries in place and say, it's not just me saying it. And because obviously we get a lot of, what you hear is, well, Lucy's got TikTok and everybody's got TikTok, Mum, apart from me. You know, that old thing.
Yeah, of course. No, we've all had it as parents. Yeah, or the peer pressure. Amy, we need more, like, you know, if your child says, I'm not going to wear my seatbelt, well, it's the law. You have to. It's the law. You can't. Amy, I take on board the point you make. Thank you. A lot of people want to talk about this. Let's hit one. Might go a minute late to news. Amy, best wishes to your daughter, Jazz in Gravesend. The point you want to make, Jazz. Hello.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I've got a 10-year-old son, and we've got an e-parental SIM on his phone. So we put a time limit on his phone. Any apps that he wants to download, I'll get a notification, so he can't go on any social media. And it's purely for, he goes to school, we can track him going to school. He has a downtime from 8 till 4, so after 4 p.m. his phone automatically turns off.
Oh, wow.
So he can't use it. What about homework? So homework, again, he has his tablet, so we can monitor what he wants to do on his tablet. Again, we put parental control on that. So he has online tuition, and the tutor encourages them to go on Google and search things. Again, we just monitor it very, very carefully. And originally, he was like, oh, I want to download apps, I want to download TikTok, my friends have got it, he's 10. I was like, nope. And now, he's got no interest whatsoever. His phone comes home, he puts it down, and that's it. He cracks on with his normal tuition class.
And he's totally relaxed with the operating.
Actually, brilliant, yeah. I mean, after school, his friends will look at it and go, oh, look at my phone. And he's like, I'm not interested, Dad, I'm fine.
Well done, Chaz. Thank you. We are already late to the news. Best wishes to him. There's such a conversation to be had, we might return to it. But we'll move on after the news and talk about the P word. No, profit. And is it a dirty word? Ed Miliband says BP's profits are moral and economically wrong, but he's taken down that social media post. What's the reaction from his colleague, Housing Secretary Steve Reid?
Of course he's right, yeah. I heard that figure yesterday when I was coming into work. I heard the figure on the radio. No, absolutely staggering, to be honest.
Plus, as it's announced, women should be given specialist NHS help after their first miscarriage to prevent more than 10,000 pregnancy losses a year. We'll be hearing, of course, from campaigner and my Global Radio colleague, Mylene Klass, on that later in this hour. But the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, King Charles has told Congress that the UK-US relationship is more important than ever. He used his speech to US lawmakers to try to smooth over recent tensions.
250 years ago, or as we say in the United Kingdom, just the other day...
Charles was met with bursts of applause and standing ovations. The address was followed by a state dinner at the White House, where Donald Trump turned to politics and Iran.
Charles agrees with me, even more than I do. We're never going to let that opponent have a nuclear weapon. They know that, and they've known it right now very powerfully.
The King and Queen will head to New York later. A cabinet minister has insisted the UK does have the capability to tackle Russia's shadow fleet. New analysis by the Reuters news agency shows no clear reduction of sanctioned vessels in British waters since Sir Keir Starmer announced a crackdown. He announced plans last month to allow the military to board ships, but experts have warned it risks looking like an empty threat. Housing Secretary Steve Reid struggled to tell Nick the answer to how many ships the UK has seized.
I don't know the answer to that.
Zero.
I don't know the answer
Zero.
To that. Well, you know the answer to that.
I know the answer. Yes. Why has France seized four and the United Kingdom zero after the Prime Minister said we would, quote, go after the Shadow Fleet. Is it because we don't have any Royal Navy vessels that can do it?
Well, we do have Royal Navy vessels. I mean, we saw recently, didn't we, there was that situation where there were Russian submarines over some very vital cables mm-hmm. off the coast of Scotland. They didn't know that we were observing and watching them, but we were.
Sir Keir Starmer will have to face MPs later after surviving an attempt to open an inquiry into the Lord Mandelson vetting row. The Tories had called him for him to appear before the Privileges Committee. Routinely offering testing after a first miscarriage could prevent thousands of losses in the UK every year. Currently, the NHS only provides testing for someone who's had three. The government says it will review miscarriage supports. And Heathrow Airport says it expects passenger numbers to be down for the rest of the year because of the war in Iran. Around half a million people use the airports in Dubai, Doha and Abu Dhabi every day. Most of the airspace above the region has now reopened, but many are still avoiding the area. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 10.332 after closing up 11 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a cold and sunny start for most of the UK, warming up later with a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine on Wednesday, April the 29th, when profit is a dirty word, the extraordinary amount of profits, not just the money that they've raked in, profits for BP. But is it because they've been profiteering? Blatant profiteering, BP. You get the initials there? The words, we'll look at that in more detail. Plus, as I said before the news, women should be given specialist NHS help after their first miscarriage to prevent more than 10,000 pregnancy losses. You'll be hearing from my Global Radio colleague, Classic FM and Smooth, Mylene Klass, who's campaigned on this.
Women feel invisible. Nobody necessarily knows what to say. The language around miscarriage is just so negative. It really is the final taboo.
Mylene will join us later in this hour. And then back to what we heard from the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, in the first hour, talking about the government's plans for right to buy in the first hour of the programme.
We're reforming right to buy to make the system fairer. We're reducing the discount that people will get if they buy their own council home to 15%.
In fact, it's increasing to 15%. But are they building enough homes? As, of course, they are at 342,000 in a 1.5 million programme. We'll look at that later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question. How much profit is too much profit? Could there be such a thing? If you'll allow, and by the way, if you've listened to me any time, you know that I believe in the basic tenets of capitalism. Hopefully, when a company makes profit, it expands. As it expands, it hopefully gives more jobs. What's not to like? But is there a level at which profit becomes too much? Well, oil giant BP has been criticised for raking in £366 a second during the Iran war, or making in profits £2.4 billion in the first quarter. Indeed, it's reported by the Daily Mirror, the new chief executive, Meg O'Neill, could now be looking at a £13.7 million payout this year. I say again, I'm all for profits, but is this too much? Well, for one person, it seemed to have been, because on a social media post, Ed Miliband, the energy secretary, said profiting from a crisis is morally and economically wrong, and he linked it to an online report of BP's profits more than doubling as oil and gas prices have been pushed higher by the conflict. By the way, if you happen to be driving past a BP petrol station, it has to be BP, just quickly call in or text or email me what a price of a litre of unleaded and a litre of diesel is, if you can just quickly do that. While you're doing that, if you are near a BP garage, and obviously don't take your eyes off the road. Housing Secretary Steve Reid, one of Ed Miliband's senior colleagues, was on, and I said, Did he agree with those initial comments about being morally and economically wrong?
Of course he's right, yeah. I heard that figure yesterday when I was coming into work. I heard the figure on the radio. No, absolutely staggering, to be honest, when everybody is struggling with the cost of living crisis, but particularly the cost of petrol at the pumps.
But I thought you were going to crack down on profiteering. I've heard that from both the Chancellor and the Prime Minister, and clearly these figures appear during the Iran conflict, so how come they can do it? Where's the crackdown?
Well, that's why we have the windfall tax. And I think Ed Miliband, who's the relevant Secretary of State, said yesterday, we have the windfall tax and it will apply. So, you know, we won't just be letting these big corporations profit from the war. They will be hit.
Why has he taken the post down then?
I didn't know he had taken the post down.
Yes, he subsequently. I wonder if it's because, of course, BP is a UK-listed company. Is it right for the British government to go after UK-listed companies the size of BP that they're morally and economically wrong, Secretary of State?
The windfall tax exists, and we brought it in because you have the energy companies, the oil companies, making profits way in excess of what they were anticipating doing. I think it's right to claw the excess profit back, not their normal profits, and then use that to help people with the cost of living crisis. That's why one of the reasons people have just seen £100 cut in their energy bills this month.
Two of the top five oil companies in the world are listed here in the United Kingdom. Should we have a government that's hostile to them? Talk about one of them being morally and economically wrong?
No, it's not being hostile to energy companies to put a windfall tax. If they're making profits that are way above their own expectations, then families are facing a cost of living crisis. I think it's right to use those excess profits to support families through difficult times.
Well, that was the housing secretary. By the way, there's a lot of BP garages out there. Thank you to so many of you, to Dan, to John. I'll just read this out from Daniel. BP in Bournemouth, 165.9 for unleaded, 197.9 for diesel. Thanks to all of you who sent in those prices. Now, we first touched on this in the first hour of the show. Editor-in-chief at City AM, Christian May, is our business commentator, and he talked a little bit about the criticism that's come from Ed Miliband.
I can unpick a number of things that are not quite right about a senior politician branding a company's performance and profits in such a way. UK-listed company, by the way. Morally and economically wrong, he said. Well, some people might agree that it's morally, maybe people might say, uncomfortable for a company to be so obviously and literally profiting from a period of extreme volatility and hardship for many. But the problem with it is, and this is where I think he's missed his mark on the economically wrong observation. He says this is why we're taxing these windfall profits to help support the cost of living. But he's not, because the vast majority of these exceptional profits came not from domestic UK oil and gas exploration, which is what windfall profits are applied to, but to their oil trading division. And that will be taxed in the normal way, i.e. through corporation tax and through taxes on the salaries and bonuses that are provided to the people in that division. So he was, in fact, himself economically wrong. And then there will, of course, be a perfectly valid debate as to the extent to which he was right on the moral point. I don't think he is, by the way. Britain has two of the world's top five major oil and gas companies listed here in the UK. Huge expertise, jobs and revenue. If the government wants to start saying that they're morally wrong or reprehensible for performing in the way they perform, then don't be surprised if they disappear. And I think we'd all literally be the poorer for that.
Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. I'm now joined by Christian Dunn. What do you call a collection of Christians? I don't know, a church probably. Christian Dunn is a professor and environmental scientist and commentator at Bangor University. Professor, how much profit is too much profit? Is Mr. Miliband, Secretary of State Miliband, broadly right in what he's saying? Morning to you.
Good morning, good morning. Well, part of me rather wished I'd bought some shares in BP before this happened.
You and I both.
When it comes to this, I mean, obviously, I mean, the minister's not understanding windfall tax is quite concerning, to be perfectly honest, because, yes, the profits that they're making here are not going to be taxed in the same way. They're not going to be part of that. My issue here is that I'm surprised that people are surprised that companies are making money from war. I mean, war profiteering is as old as warfare itself. That's my first point. My second point, really, is this really highlights the need, the necessity now for our country to look at energy security in a serious way, not in an ill-thought-out, turn-the-tap-off-immediate sort of knee-jerk reaction, which some parties are considering. No, we need to do this in a pragmatic way. We need to, of course, look at renewables, but we mustn't forget the use of fossil fuels as a bridging technology to get us to where we want we to be. So we've got to start looking at the North Sea more.
But we can't put solar power in our tanks, in our vans and our buses and our cars, of course, Professor.
No, we can't. And which is why we need a huge amount of cheap, clean fuel. And the only way that we can really achieve that is nuclear. And that is the elephant in the room. And if we have that amount of power that is clean and cheap, then we can start really looking at electrifying our infrastructure. Before that happens, I'm afraid it's just pie in the sky.
Oil companies like to say that they try and polish their green credentials. They are looking at other sources of power. This is a world you study. This is a world you lecture in. How valid are those claims?
I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the oil companies. They are doing their... They are looking at that. They are looking at different ways of producing fuel, making it more green. But fundamentally, they are a business that makes money from extracting fossil fuel. So we should not be surprised when they make a lot of money from a crisis, which is meaning that they can make more money from extracting fossil fuel.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thank you, Professor. Christian Dunn, environmental scientist, commentator at Bangor University. Listening to that, Alex Brummer, who's award-winning city editor and chief economic commentator for the Daily Mail. Alex, a question I didn't think I'd ever ask you, sir. Can there be too much profit at a time? Good morning.
Actually, I don't think there can be too much profit, because you have to ask yourself what happens to that profit when it's earned. Well, people will focus, obviously, on the bonuses for the executives, and they will be outrageous, and they probably are too high. But a lot of that money will come back to you and I for our pension funds and for our insurance returns and so on. So we'll be beneficiaries. But I think in the long term, it's important that BP is a big independent UK company earns this kind of money. People have got very short memories. It was only last year that BP was so weak because it has so much debt. It sits on, I think, £28 billion of debt that it almost went bankrupt. And indeed, there was a suggestion that it would have to merge with either Shell or Exxon or one of the other big oil companies to survive. So it needs this money to pay down some of that debt too, and to continue investing in fossil fuels.
Alex, I hear you, but some of it is coming back for the LBC listeners and the readers of the Daily Mail, but they're forking out for more for their unleaded and diesel at the same time, Alex, when they go to the forecourts.
I think, you know, there's an economic misunderstanding here about how oil companies work, and I don't want to get into the technicalities too much, but the upstream, where they actually drill and earn the oil, and the downstream, where they actually sell the oil, are very different businesses. And the one at the downstream business is in a competitive market. They're not allowed, under monopoly and competition law, to subsidise the downstream from the upstream. And so the downstream is set by the global markets, and that's not their particular problem. And they can't subsidise from one to the other.
Lastly, a word on, we heard from the Chancellor that they were going, and indeed actually the Prime Minister, they would crack down on any profiteering. Doesn't seem to be any action. Are they likely to deliver on that promise, Alex?
Well, I think that there will be a big temptation, particularly at this time, just before the local elections, for ministers to come out and say, this is a chance to really crack down on the oil companies. But I think in this particular case, and I'm very sensitive to the financial situation of BP, the fact that it has this large debt, and also that it is the UK's primary and great explorer. I mean, it is opening five major projects around the world, which will keep fossil fuels prices down over the coming years. So we should be rather grateful for them, and particularly some of these projects are natural gas projects, which are much less polluting actually than oil.
All right, Alex, as ever, thank you. Alex Brummer, city editor, chief economic commentator for the Daily Mail. £2.4 billion profits, £13 million potentially for the BP boss Meg O'Neill, who only started this month. That's not bad going, is it, for your first salary, annual salary? Of course, coming in on that. And also this important story that I've mentioned about provision of help for women who miscarry. My global colleague, Classic FM and Smooth Radio's Mylene Klass, told me previously...
9 months later, you can still have the same level of PTSD as a soldier returning from Afghanistan. If that doesn't tell you just how psychologically damaging a miscarriage actually is, imagine going through that.
Sorry, Mylene wasn't talking to me because I wasn't making that noise. I'm damn certain of that. Mylene was talking to someone. Mylene Klass joins me after the 9:16 LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
The King has spoken to US lawmakers about the unbreakable relationship between Britain and America. Sir Keir Starmer has survived a vote calling for him to face a parliamentary inquiry over the Peter Mandelson vetting row. And a pregnancy charity says better care for women in the UK could prevent 10,000 miscarriages a year. LBC weather, sunshine for most of the UK this morning with a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb on the M25. The clockwise entry slip road at junction 21 at the M1 remains closed. It's following an accident. There are delays on the M1 as a result from junction 9 Redbourne, and also anti-clockwise on the M25. It's slow to junction 20 at King's Langley, and surrounding routes, especially the A41 and the A405, are extremely busy as a result. Now elsewhere on the M25, there are delays clockwise at junction 2 at the A2 after an accident that happened earlier. Big problems in Harlesden. Manor Park Road is closed southbound, and that's because the roadworks have been damaged and there are lengthy queues. And on the train, still no Chiltern Railway services northbound at West Ruislip.
This is LBC.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on, and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
3, 2, sun. EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer. The tea in G&T. But your delicate fragrance. Hints of lemon thyme. When the tea's this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to dance. 10 more robots, 10 more Lumbos, 10 more salsas. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires this Friday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules apply, 18 plus.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun.
Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the ribbon can without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thames Link Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come to your calls and no shortage of them on oil, and when profit is too much profit in a moment, but to an equally, if not more important story. Women should be given specialist NHS help after their first miscarriage to prevent more than 10,000 pregnancy losses. I can't believe what I'm about to read from this newspaper, The Times. In most of the UK, women must have 3 miscarriages before the health service investigates the underlying cause with blood tests and or ultrasound research. Well, let's turn to someone who's campaigned tirelessly on this, my Global Radio colleague, Mylene Klass, who, of course, you will catch on Classic FM and Smooth. Why no show on LBC? But then again, I don't run this station, so I can't answer that. But I can tell you that she's been recognised and received an honour, an MBE, for her campaigning on this. Mylene, just, if you don't mind, I know, but remind the listeners why this is such a personal campaign for you.
Well, I now have a rainbow baby, which is the term that you give to a baby after a baby loss. But previous to him, I suffered 4 miscarriages, and I learnt firsthand and very up and closely that just how difficult the system is for women who lose babies. It was pretty traumatic, and I didn't realise that I would be a part of that figure of suffering consecutive miscarriages before I received any kind of intervention or help.
This is just hideous that a woman has to, and indeed for that matter, her husband or a boyfriend or a partner, has to go through three miscarriages.
Well, it's interesting because today there's a huge report that has just landed.
Yes.
It's actually the game changer, if you like. We have been lobbying the government for some time now. My son is going to be 7 this year, so that gives you an indication as to how long this has been going, because I've been working with Tommy's on this report for the past 4 or 5 years now. But the graded model of miscarriage care that landed on Wes Streeting's desk today means that all the homework that needs to be done in order to get women the help that they require, the 250,000 women that suffer miscarriages in the UK every single year, 250,000 women going through this every single year. And we say that because we actually don't have official data collected. No one's bothered to count us, as it were. We have now provided the information that is required as to how to give a graded model of care. What is a graded model of care? It is basically a piece of work that shows a pathway of care for both medical practitioners and the patients. So at the minute, women don't know where to go when they're having a miscarriage. Do they go to A&E? Do they sit in triage next to someone having a heart attack and a nosebleed? Where do they sit amongst the priority list? Do they go to their GP? If they do, does the GP have permission or the expertise to give them progesterone, which saves up to 10,000 babies every single year? We've now discovered that medically, practitioners don't necessarily have the confidence or the expertise that's required. That's why this report will help them and guide them. But also, from an economic standpoint, miscarriage costs the government £471 million every single year. Now, if you implemented this report, it would cost £15 million. That's £11.5 million on staff and the rest on scans and medication to save within a year 10,000 babies. How can this be ignored? We've now had to wait for this report to come to fruition simply because we wanted to make sure we had live births at the end. We wanted to show that it was, I mean, it's cruel, but it's essential. We wanted to show we could get live births, and we've been able to do that. So the homework's been done. Over to you, Health Secretary.
And this is a trial done by Thomas National Centre for Miscarriage Research, which you've referenced, and Birmingham Women's Hospital. Now, the government says it's reviewing miscarriage support in the new Women's Health Strategy. Baroness Merran, Parliamentary Under Secretary of State for the Department of Health and Social Care, said they will carefully consider.
Well, no, that has been reviewed. It's already been reviewed, and the Women's Health Strategy has already been refreshed. And miscarriage was not addressed. It was just given the nod that we would have it reviewed. So my question is, how many reviews of reports must we have before action is actually taken?
And that's what I want you to do lastly, because as you are aware, Wes Streeting appears on this programme quite a lot.
Yes, along he cancelled me on Monday, Nick. I know he's your mate, so please give him a call, because this is the fifth time he's moved me. I was meant to see him on Monday. I think it's no coincidence that I was meant to see him Monday and this report lands today. I've messaged him twice saying, what's your view on this report? And he's ignored those messages.
I don't know if he's my mate, but we have a good working relationship. What I want you to do, we will now record what you want to say to the Health Secretary, and we will play it next time he's on the show. Mylene Klass, this is what you want to say to Wes Streeting.
Okay, well, Wes, you are the Health Secretary. You say that women who are suffering child loss and women's fertility is at the forefront of your mind, and you wish to give them the care they deserve, and that it is unacceptable the way they're being treated. Well, we've given you the report. We've done the maths for you. We've got medical practitioners who have done the science behind all of this. It's over to you now. We cannot do any more other than give you the report you so desperately have been waiting for. Now it requires action. What are you going to do? What is it going to take for you to rubber stamp this report and help 250,000 women? Scotland have done it. They've got a graded model of care. Northern Ireland have done it. They've got paid bereavement leave for women suffering this. Wales and England, we're still waiting. Why? Why are we on the sixth generation of Viagra for male fertility, and why are women still being sent home after a miscarriage with a paracetamol and told that it's just one of those things? It isn't. What are you going to do?
Mylene Klass, thanks for coming by the studio. I can hear the passion in your voice. Good luck with your campaigning. We will play that and give you my word the next time we speak to
you.
Yes, we will. I wouldn't dare cross you, Mylene Klass. Mylene Klass, one of my global radio colleagues, Classic FM and Smooth Radio, and, of course, an acknowledged miscarriage campaigner, having received that MBE. Mylene, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on to other conversations. And I asked if you were passing BP garages what the prices were that you were paying. David's in Windsor. David, tell me your story. Good morning.
Yeah, pacing. Well, I'm actually in Amersham at the moment.
Right.
Price at garage is 159 for unleaded and 189 for diesel, so just the normal.
But
my point is, Miliband is misleading this country to set his own gain. his own means, you know, his own agenda, whatever it is. It's ridiculous because oil companies don't set how much profit they're going to make.
Yep.
It's a commodity which is like world, used worldwide.
Yes.
So therefore, when governments put up the price, you know, the oil companies will then give them the
Well, the governments don't want. Put up the price. When BP puts up the price, do you mean?
Well, the government set how much is to be taxed on. Mm. So when you tax a company 78%, where's that 78% going? Because it's still, I've not seen any of it. You know, and it just seems to me that it's a crime to make money these days.
You don't think this profit is too much profit, David?
It doesn't matter if it's too much. It's what it is. It's a commodity that's used every day by everyone.
I hear you, David, but is it right during a time of war that they are making, many people would say, excessive profit?
Politicians that started the war in the first place.
Sorry?
And there was a politician that started this war in the first place.
No, I know, but I'm asking, is it right that they make this level of profit during a war?
Well, you need to speak to oil companies about that, but at the end of the day, you know, I mean, if they're still making a profit after being heavily taxed, I don't understand.
All right, David, thank you. Colin's in Alton. Colin, is there too much profit here in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. I think you're dividing the profits area into not dividing them into the separate boxes. The profits that are being made are not as a result of the increased petrol prices in the petrol station.
Well, in part they are. Come on. Not wholly, but in part, of course they are.
I would love to see the actual division, it's the trading on the world market.
Hold on. Profits for the first quarter, $3.2 billion, up from $1.4 billion a year earlier. City analysts had forecast $2.7 billion. So if you don't see that's the increase down to Iran, I don't know how to spell it out to you, sir.
I'm not saying it's not down to Iran. What I'm saying is it is traders on the oil markets throughout the world that are making these profits. And the reason the profits are there is because of the volatility. And the oil market, like any other, is one where they're selling short, buying futures, and they're trading in the oil price volatility. And it's not really to do with the price at the petrol pumps.
All right. I'm going to absolutely take on board. I'm afraid I'm going to disagree, but I disagree with you agreeably, because not whole, of course I'm not sure. But I'm sorry, if you look at those figures, and I won't run through them again, but the extraordinary, more than half $1 billion unexpected profit, that is going to come from there. Colin, thank you. Andrew Cox says it is war profiteering. Profiting off death and destruction is morally wrong. I wonder how much the percentage increase in profits could be linked to over 100 schoolgirls being blown up in recent actions in the Iran conflict. Clive Smith referenced the bumper profits of BP. Surely everyone is missing the point. Had the UK government opened up additional oil extraction in the North Sea, the government could have enhanced the Chancellor's coffers and therefore provide more tax revenue to help the UK balance of payments. Jeff in Surrey, BP profits. What about the tax for just 3 months of £1.65 billion? The government should be thankful for the incoming tax revenue they will get. Jay, you will be the next caller on that. And then also after the news, we'll come back to this assurance from Housing Secretary Steve Reid, talking about the government's plans for right to buy.
Where councils build new homes, they won't be available through right to buy for 35 years. The reason we're doing that is because the current system is stopping councils from building council homes.
Which is great for those tenants, of course, but what about backfilling, building the homes, of course, that they subsequently buy? The government off target by some distance. We'll come back to that. It is 9:30. This is Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC, and the news is with Lottie Morley.
King Charles has used a speech to US lawmakers to smooth tensions between Britain and America. He's on a 4-day state visit to the US and told Congress our relationship is more important than ever. President Trump then hosted a banquet for the King and Queen at the White House. A study has found offering tests after first miscarriage could prevent more than 10,000 pregnancy losses every year. Currently, the NHS carries out investigations after a third miscarriage. And former FBI Director James Comey has been charged with threatening the life of Donald Trump. It's over an image he shared on social media, which seemed to suggest he should be removed from the White House. He denies the allegations. LBC weather turning warm and sunny across the UK. Windy in the south, though, with highs of 21.
LBC.
Creatives, it's time to get prepped for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
A box of Abel & Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel & Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
3, 2, sun. EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. Book now at EasyJet.com. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Sale ends 5th of May. Holidays minimum spend and after protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to our conversation, when is profit too much profit? In the first hour of the show, as we've referenced on a number of occasions, I spoke with Steve Reed, and indeed he's featured in our conversation about oil. Remember, it's morally and economically wrong to make the profits. Now, Mr. Reed is sticking with that. Ed Miliband has taken down his post. I don't quite know what's lying behind that, but we're trying to get into more detail exactly what happened there. But the main part of Steve Reed's appearance was to talk about increasing the right to buy, the government scheme allowing eligible accountants or tenants in England to buy their homes at a discount. But I also asked him, obviously that's great. People have to live there for a certain number of years. I think it starts at 10 to a maximum of 35 years, and the more years you're in, the bigger the discount. But then, if those homes go, we should be building more because of the housing crisis. So how are we getting on with that part of the proposed legislation?
Well, what we're doing is we're reforming right to buy to make the system fairer. We're reducing the discount that people will get if they buy their own council home to 15%. And where councils build new homes, they won't be available through right to buy for 35 years. The reason we're doing that is because the current system is stopping councils from building council homes. And you know, and your listeners will know, we have a housing crisis in this country. The number of people sleeping rough on the streets doubled under the previous Conservative government. The number of families sleeping in living in temporary accommodation doubled to 170,000 families. So we need more council homes to put a roof over people's heads. But councils won't build if they think they're going to be sold off after 2 years, which is what was happening under the previous government. So we're going to retain them as council homes for a minimum 35 years now. That means we've got more homes to put people in to live.
And just to clarify, the level of discount goes to what a maximum level will it be, Secretary of State?
It'll be 15% maximum. So people will still get a discount. They'll need.
So it starts at 5, is that right? And then
and it goes up depending on how long that you've been there. That's
I
right.
See.
Now, but you'll need to.
How long do you have to live there to get the 5% discount?
You need to be there for 10 years now. So you know, previously it was just 2 years. So you could move into a house and 2 years later you could buy it with a big discount. Now that's great for the people that got the home, but it's terrible for those 170,000 families living in temporary accommodation that didn't have anywhere to go and live. So we're trying to make the system fair. I want people to be able to buy their own home, but not at the expense of other families who are left living on the streets or in temporary accommodation. So we're trying to balance it so that we can support both people's aspirations to have somewhere to live and buy their own home later on.
I don't know if it's the correct expression, but are you going to backfill? That is to say, as people purchase their council homes, and it's great home ownership, I'm very fortunate to say that I have it. I'm very fortunate my sons have it. It's a tremendous ambition, but you've got to build more if we're going to sell some of them.
Oh,
isn't
no,
that the reality?
Absolutely right there. So what we've done is we've opened up this pot of funding called the Social and Affordable Homes Programme. £39 billion, with a B. That will build the biggest increase in social and council housing that we've seen in this country for a generation. And we're already starting to see that come through. So last year, Nick, we built over 10,000 new council homes in this country. That's the biggest amount for 35 years, which is when records began. So we're on our way building those homes. We're rebalancing the system to try and make it fairer and get people off the streets and into a secure home.
And let's see what you had to say about that. Jenny in Berkhamsted. Jenny, what can you tell me? Jenny in Berkhamsted.
Oh, hi.
Good morning.
Yeah. So my parents purchased their council house, oh, gosh, back in the 60s, 70s.
No, it has, it has to be. I think the 70s is when it started, Jim. Mm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Can you remember what they paid for it?
Oh, gosh, no. Right. I was too young. But I remember the interest rates going up to 18%, yes, but yes, they persevered, right. And they bought it. But I was listening to your programme this morning, and the article, and I thought, hang on a minute, if you've got the right to buy,
right,
why don't you give people the right to sell? So you've got... people that are empty nesters, maybe in properties that are far too big for them to cope with.
Sorry, just break down what you're saying. So once your parents have bought, they must be allowed to sell it after a certain period.
I'm sorry, say that again?
With the right to buy, once you've lived in the property, once you've bought, so you have to live in there for, I think, 30 or 30 plus years to get the full...
Oh, gosh, they did, yeah.
But once you own it, you must be allowed to sell it at a certain point.
Of course, yeah. You can sell it. But, however, you may have older people that are rattling around in a five-bedroom house, can't afford to heat it, don't particularly want to live there, want to downsize. And that would be a perfect opportunity for the council to say, right, we're buying that house, that will be our real estate, and then that will be social... housing that will allow,
but Jenny, it's much cheaper to build, particularly if you do it in bulk, to build houses than to buy them off the open market. Jenny, that would be... I hear what you're saying, and you know, it seems like an easy fix, but in reality, and when you consider most local authorities are struggling to deliver what they should be delivering anyway, it would be way, way more economically sound to build many properties at scale than start picking them up when they go for sale. Do you not think, Jenny?
So if you think about it, don't build on Greenbelt, and the councils will be having real estate under the belt.
Okay, Jenny, I'm going to file that down as it's an idea. I honestly don't see any local authority going for it, because they could be buying properties that have all sorts of problems, and it's way, as I've said twice now, it's way, way cheaper to build new in bulk than to go around buying existing properties. Jenny, I'm glad your parents did well out of it. Good luck to them. James in Evesham. James, what do you say to this? Good morning.
Hi, Nick, first-time caller.
Good to have you on, sir. Thank you very much.
So, a little bit about my situation. Yeah. My partner was in a housing association, council house, right, last year. Our plan was that I'd move in with her. We just had a baby. I'd move in.
Right.
We'd buy the house on the right to buy scheme, because that would be the only way we could afford it. Last August, house burnt down, had a catastrophic house fire.
Oh, no.
We're still homeless, so when he was talking about the people in temporary housing, that's us. My kid's six-month-old baby's been brought up on the side of the bypass in a hotel. Nobody talks to us, no answers.
When you say nobody, you mean in local authority, in housing or departments?
You could spend a week trying to get someone to answer a phone call. Some weekends, my partner would turn up at the hotel, they wouldn't have booked it, and we'd have to pack the car up with everything, go and find friends and family to stay with. And the only thing sort of keeping us thinking, right, you know, once we're housed, we can get on the property ladder. And I turn on the radio today to hear, we're getting rid of that. And I think it's disgusting. My mum worked her whole life, and has managed to buy a two-bedroom council flat in quite a rough area, but she's on the property ladder.
Right.
And you're taking that away from families that are struggling with everything day to day and not allowing them the right to buy. I think it's ridiculous.
So, James, what does the future hold for you? What do you hope to be able to try and achieve?
We're waiting to be housed, get the kids in settled somewhere, and then start to plan on how we can, as a family, get on the property ladder. But at the moment, it doesn't look like that's ever going to be possible. And from what I heard today, it doesn't look like any option that we did have with right to buy and discounts and stuff like that has now just gone out the window.
It's so frustrating for you, James. And I don't say this glibly. Good luck. I hope I hope your luck changes, and I hope some of the housing departments decide to answer the phone to you. That seems outrageous. Thanks for being a first-timer, first class. By the way, if you were listening when we were discussing housing yesterday, Anita in Tavistock phoned in, and she explained the situation that she had rented her house out to allow her to go down, have what she called a sabbatical down by the coast, and unfortunately the tenants were not paying. You may have heard Seth say that we would start ringing the letting agency. Anita's asked us not to go, not to reveal the contents of our investigation, which of course we will absolutely honour, but just let you know that when we say we're going to make calls or we'll get involved, we do, and of course we have to respect the person that we're working for. So when the caller, the initial caller says, please can you just keep this between us and you, us and LBC, or me and LBC, that we respect that, but please don't think we dropped it. We didn't. I really can't say much more on that, I'm afraid. Robert's in Southwell. Robert, what do you want to say about housing? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello.
My parents bought their house approximately 85.
Yep.
They've been it since 1970, because I remember it well. It was a new house.
Yes.
They got 44% off discount.
What what was this, 1985, did you say, sorry?
Around about 1985.
They got a 44% discount. Good Lord.
They got I always remember it, yes, they got 44% discount. So
right.
Like the chap this morning, every time he comes on, there's a lot of words.
Yeah.
But you don't read anything. You can't understand anything.
Yeah. And did they keep it? Did they sell it? What happened to it? Did it go down to...
They sold it when my dad went to Rome, we sold it.
Right, OK. And what do you think about the shortage of housing now? We've got these government assurances that they're going to catch up there. They should be, well, they should be at about 600,000. They were, we heard this morning, at 342,000.
You know, the thing is, though, Nick, I never understand, is that what they've done since they've been in from groundwork... Or is it what they took over, which there was a lot...
Since they came to power. It's 342,000 in a little under 2 years since the Labour government came into power.
Well, you're going to get your £100 then, aren't you?
Robert, thank you. That's a bet that I have with the housing secretary that I hope they do, and I'd be very happily send £100 to a housing shelter, but I bet him £100, it's not going to happen. And I will be able to send £100 to a shelter of my choice, should I get the cheque from him. Thanks for that. Let's come back to the P word. When profit is too much profit. Richard's in Stafford. You're on the radio. Richard, good morning.
Hi, Nick. I'm another first-timer and felt compelled to ring in on this point.
Brilliant to hear from you. Thank you, Richard. What's the point you want to make?
My point is, I'm not surprised that Miliband took down his post, because isn't it another form of profiteering that the government are taking increased tax returns from every litre of fuel? I've lost count of the number of times that you've tried to persuade ministers to help motorists.
Yep. In a way they have in Europe and other parts of the world, absolutely, yeah.
That's my point. You know, I'm not surprised he took it down, because the government is profiteering just like BP.
Yes, and of course it's profits that it's thought to be somewhere in the region of 15 to 20 million pounds that they get additional tax revenue each day, so they will now be at many, many hundreds, probably hundreds of millions of pounds, that possibly explains. Just lastly, the whole idea of profit and this extraordinary level of profit, is it wrong, Richard?
We live in a capitalist society. I don't think it's necessarily wrong, but the government seems to be playing the same game. So what's the difference?
Money is... Right.
They keep saying we're monitoring the situation closely, but they never do anything. And words are cheap. How about some action?
Well said. Great to have you on board. Richard, thank you for that call. £2.4 billion profit. Profit. £13 million potentially for the boss, who only started this month. When profit is a dirty word, dirty money, we'll look at that in more detail. And we will come back to our housing conversation too. 9:45 LBC News headlines, Lottie Morley.
King Charles has used a speech to US lawmakers to smooth tensions between Britain and America. A study's found offering tests after a first miscarriage could prevent more than 10,000 pregnancy losses every year. And former FBI Director James Comey has been charged with threatening the life of Donald Trump. LBC weather turning warm and sunny across the UK, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 southbound from the Junction 9 at Redbourne to the M25. It's because the exit slip road to the M25 clockwise remains closed. It's causing delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from the M1 to Junction 20 at Kings Langley, and also on the surrounding routes, especially the A405 and the A41. Elsewhere, it's very busy on the M23 northbound at the M25 junction. A car has broken down, so there are queues on the approach.
Also, the problems continue in Harleston. It's very busy on Manor Park Road, heading southbound. The road was closed briefly because of some roadworks which are damaged. It's just reopened, but it's still very slow.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Has the King snatched triumph from the jaws of disaster? I think perhaps he has. And PMQs, it should be interesting, but these days, who knows?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
You want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do is...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that. No, you just have to
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
I swear by
it. Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
They say go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. When you're hungry for something big, like really big. Big Arch for big McDonald's hunger. Order on the McDonald's app. Served from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Dan's in.
Jen's in.
Tom. Alice. Looks like everyone's on board.
Oh, and Jess.
Tell Jess to meet us at the train station an hour earlier, though. She's always late.
Make it happen with Southeastern Group Save. Save one third on the price of train tickets when you travel at off-peak times in groups of 3 to 9 adults. Buy direct from our app or website with no booking fees. Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/groupsave.
Southeastern.
High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many holiday park homeowners feeling misled, angry, and trapped. The Holiday Park Advice Centre can help claim back any money you're owed. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ADVICE to 78900.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket.
Geographical and other restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Discount available on food. New customers only. Max saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's just pick up on some of the notes that are coming in concerning oil prices on the emails and the text. Scott in Northamptonshire, isn't the unspoken elephant in the room? If the government does help motorists like myself and cuts fuel duty, we're going to run out of fuel sooner and it will increase demand. John in Bedfordshire, talking of BP profiting from the situation, isn't that what travel agents have done for years during school holidays? Mark Hodges says BP profits are obscene. They're illustrative of why we need to move away from finite energy sources. This is very much what the professor was telling us, actually, at this top of the hour. They clearly show us why fossil fuel interests finance climate-sceptical parties. That's why Ed Miliband is right. Just last year on that, we're still trying to find out why Mr. Miliband decided to delete his post. We haven't yet to have a response. If we do manage to get in the next 10 minutes or so, we will let you know. Let's come back to housing, though. That was the other conversation that we got onto in the first hour. Anne is in Isleworth. Anne, your view on this right to buy that we heard from the relevant Secretary of State. Good morning.
Well, I approve it totally, but B, I mean, the whole right to buy was a scheme to move public money into private hands. I don't know if you know this, but Mrs. Thatcher's housing minister, who steered it through Parliament, his son owns 40 ex-council flats in Lambeth,
right,
charging 5 times council rent.
Right. OK, I'm not familiar with that, and obviously we're going to have to do a little bit of background on that. But if you come to how at least this government explained, someone who's lived in their home for a period of years, let's say 15, 20, 25, 30 years, to get a discount to buy, are you broadly in favour of that, Anne?
I am in favour of a discount to buy if they want to and they've been there a long time. But I just feel that, you know, the whole thing was devised in order to get rid of social housing, because the councils were not allowed to build any new houses with the money they got from selling them.
Right.
Half
but of course,
the money also had to go to the Treasury.
But of course, just lastly, of course, it's worth noting that this government is not, unfortunately, rebuilding at the same rate either. Because
they're going to put $39 billion into building social housing. Did you not hear him say that?
Did you not hear him also say, if you want to challenge me in that fashion, that we're at 342,000 when we should be at 600,000 homes?
Yes, I agree with you, but we're starting from a very low base because the Tories never built anything.
Well, they did build some, but nothing at the rate that's needed. Your level
yes,
of confidence...
nothing at the rate that the Labour Party are already building.
You have full confidence that the government will achieve this?
Yes, I have.
And that's lastly based on...
On the fact that it was the Labour government who started social housing in the first place.
But if we say where we find ourselves now, and indeed where we find ourselves over the next
well,
three...
Well, because the Labour Party is always going to look after the people who need it most. Not the people at the top, like Mrs. Thatcher did.
What, like elderly people with their winter fuel allowance?
A third of pensioners are millionaires, and the people at the very lowest level of pensions got the winter fuel allowance.
The people driving white vans at the moment, white van man and white van woman, who can't afford to put diesel in their car.
That's because of the price of diesel and the price of oil, which is being ripped off by BP, as we know.
But I thought the government was
£31 billion profit in the last 3 months.
Yes, but I thought the government was not going to allow profiteering. We've heard it from both.
They're going to have to stamp down on it and tax them.
Well, why aren't they doing that? You say that Labour.
They will. I mean, the Iran war's only been going 3 months. Give them a chance.
You're equally confident they will crack down on that.
I'm hoping they will.
Right, OK. Let's see how they go, Anne. Thank you for the background on all of that. David's in Macclesfield. David, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah.
Hello.
Listen, am I correct in saying that the overriding concern is the housing shortage?
Absolutely, yes. We are short of housing, yes.
OK. Right, I'm just trying to find the lowest common denominator. Now, look... Obviously, if there's a housing shortage, and what they've got to do is they've got to copy the Asian example where people have one room, basically.
Sorry, we want to copy the Asian example where we all live in one room?
Well, when you see them all, we're talking about one...
But why would we want to move to that?
Well, because that's the only option. Either that is a tent.
Well, the option is... that when you say you're going to build houses at this rate, and by the way, the previous administration didn't either, that when you say you're going to build at this rate, you do build at this rate. And I fear that's not what's going to happen if you look at the latest figures. We don't want aspirations for people that all they will do is live in one room as a family, do we? That's a backward step, David.
Well, no, it's not a backward step.
Well, it is a backward step.
Until we get their act together, then that's the only way around it. Now, that'll be for single people or couples. It doesn't necessarily mean people with kids. That just means single people or couples. I mean, if somebody can live in a hotel room for 10 years, then they're quite capable of living in a one-room apartment that has all the facilities necessary.
I'm going to file that as an idea too. I mean, disagree with you agreeably. I don't think that's the way. I don't think many people would relish the prospect of an entire family possibly living in one room, or maybe with a bathroom outside. I don't know. David, thank you. We have got an interesting area this time, haven't we? James is in St Albans. James, you want to talk about the rental market. Good morning.
Good morning. A little bit confused, Nick. So obviously with the right to buy and everybody sort of being very forward for it, if I privately rented from a private landlord for, say, 30, 35 years, and then, I don't know, came into some money, however it may be, there's no point, are they going to offer me any discount on buying that property in the slightest? If anything, the capital gain, the interest on the property will have gone up, so the property's worth more.
Right.
I don't think there should be a right to buy discount. I don't think it should be applicable.
It's been practiced by many governments. How important is the prospect of owning someone's own home, owning your own home? How crucial is that in your book?
Well, I own my own home. It is an aspiration and it is something that people want, but why should I subsidise it with a massive discount as a taxpayer when 60, 70, 80% of people who buy their houses don't get that right. Because if I rented something privately, I would be entitled to zero discount.
Indeed you would. Indeed you would. But it's whether you want to see... Now, where I think it works, by the way, James, as what I've been talking about so many times, not just with you, but with the housing minister, it's great if a local authority sells 100 houses at that discount, but they have to build 100 more. And that's where, for me, this equation has never worked. Under successive governments, I hasten to add, under successive governments. James.
No, I agree. I see what you're saying. You sell 100, build 100. But what I'm saying is the money that would have been lost from the discounts that they're receiving on the 100 sold could go towards the government and be put to use as tax money. I don't understand why. I mean, one of the last callers got 44% off their house price.
I know,
that's ludicrous.
I mean, I wonder if he's got that quite right, because that was an extraordinary thing. That was back in 1985, the caller said that. It does seem a vast amount of money, doesn't it?
I'd love to know what the sort of discounts in the last sort of 5-10 years people have been managed to get that are quite accurate. But either way, I don't see why there should be a discount applied for living somewhere for 30 years when you've been paying rent, and I would if I was in a private landlord. So I don't understand.
Well, you're right. Lastly on this, the maximum discount now under this government will be 15%. Again, you still think even that is too much?
Yes.
Yeah. OK, thank you for that. Thanks for your input, James. Let's feature some, to finish with some of the messages and emails that have come in. Oh, no, let's go. Have we got... Yes, we have got time. Mark's in Maidstone. Mark, you're on the radio. What do you want to say this? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning, Nick.
No, good morning, you've got about a minute,
so
go ahead.
OK, I'll try and keep it quick. Yes, I remember when Maggie brought the right to buy scheme in.
Yes.
And at the time, I felt like the previous caller, where you feel like it's a bit unfair for the people that have had to go through all the other different bits and pieces to make sure that they can get on the property ladder. So I think, if we still want to have this right to buy scheme in place, then when the property comes up for sale for the very first time from the people that had originally bought it under the right to buy scheme, why not apply capital gains tax on it?
Oh, that's interesting, because of the... Or maybe... Well, it depends. What's capital gains at the moment? Is it 24 or 28%? I can't quite remember.
I think it's somewhere around that. I just think it, you know, fair's fair. If they've gained something, then why not give something back to the state on the profit you make?
Or would you go as far as James, the previous caller, who doesn't really hold with it whatsoever and thinks it's wrong, and why are they given that sort of leg up? Because as James rightly points out, you wouldn't get it in the other sector. It doesn't like...
No, I absolutely agree. No, I agree. I don't think it should be done at all. But if we are doing it, then fair's fair. Capital gains on the first time it gets sold.
Thanks for that, Mark. Remember when Mrs. Thatcher brought this in? It was a great vote winner, the aspiration of owning your own home. It is said that she turned possibly millions, certainly hundreds of thousands of people, into being Conservative supporters. But as was shown then, and I fear will be shown now, it only really works if you build the homes after you sell them all off. And unfortunately, that was something that the Thatcher government didn't do. One has to say, subsequent ones haven't done particularly well either. That's the last word for today. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You download the LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for today. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. I hesitate to say it, but I hope that we are moving into a period, perhaps, where the irresistible lure of the other side of the Atlantic goes into abeyance for a while. When the King heads home, perhaps our attentions will come back to Britain with him. But for now, it is this extraordinary visit to which I want to turn your attention first. And the sense at the moment, and I can almost hear the opening strains of I Got You, Babe, by Sonny and Cher beginning in the background, because it is a little bit Groundhog Day. But at the moment, it looks like this has actually gone very well from both the King's point of view, but more pertinently from the point of view of the Prime Minister and indeed the United Kingdom. But of course, every time we allow ourselves to think that, along comes reality to refresh us.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Donald Trump has claimed the King agrees Iran should not be allowed to have nuclear weapons. The US president made the claims during a state dinner at the White House last night. Charles continued to celebrate the relationship between the UK and US and made several jokes.
Indeed, you recently commented, Mr. President, that if it were not for the United States, European countries would be speaking German. Dare I say that if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking French.
In a speech to Congress, he reflected on the US and UK's history and the future challenges they face. Royal commentator Sarah Hewson told LBC Charles and Camilla's four-day state visit has been a great success so far.
This is King Charming in action, isn't it? He has absolutely wowed his host, President Trump. He's had a meeting out of his hands. He's had countless numbers of standing ovations when he addressed both houses of Congress yesterday.
Today, the King and Queen will travel to New York. A pregnancy charity says better care for women who've had a miscarriage could prevent 10,000 losses a year. Currently, closer examinations are only available on the NHS after a third loss. Broadcaster Mylene Klass has had four miscarriages and is an ambassador for Tommy's. She told LBC what she wants to see from the Health Secretary.
Whereas you are the Health Secretary, you say that women who are suffering child loss and women's fertility is at the forefront of your mind, and you wish to give them the care they deserve. Well, we've given you the report. We've done the maths for you. We've got medical practitioners who have done the science behind all of this. It's over to you now. We cannot do any more other than give you the report you so desperately have been waiting for. Now it requires action.
LBC has contacted West Streeting for a response. A government minister has told LBC it's staggering that BP's profits more than doubled in the first 3 months of this year. Campaigners have accused the firm of profiting at the expense of households who've seen fuel prices jump because of the war in Iran. And an annual report has found Europe is now losing snow and ice cover in its coldest regions. Scientists and experts worked together on the UN-backed European State of the Climate report. They found at least 95% of the continent experienced above average temperatures last year. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 68 points at 10,263. The pound buys $1.35 and a €1.15. LBC weather, a cold and sunny start for most of the UK, warming up later though with highs of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Somebody in the King's retinue deserves a pay rise. This is a beautiful, this is almost a poem, isn't it? This diplomatic comment in response to Trump's nonsense about the King agreeing with him regarding Iran. A spokesman from Buckingham Palace, or a spokesman for the King, said, "The King is naturally mindful of his government's long-standing and well-known position on the prevention of nuclear proliferation." Donald Trump this morning has already posted a picture of himself in sunglasses under the title "No More Mr. Nice Guy." I'll share the detail of the text with that picture with you shortly, but it is evidence that we weren't exactly dealing with what you might call a sensible or stable individual. Iran can't get their act together, he wrote. They don't know how to sign a non-nuclear deal. Well, Barack Obama would have something to say about that. They better, because of course they signed one when he was president, but Donald Trump elected to tear it up and is now complaining that they won't sign something which will be almost by definition inferior. They better get smart soon, exclamation mark, President DJT. And there is a photograph of him behind a sort of bombed landscape, wearing sunglasses and touting an AK-47. Well, I don't know if it's an AK-47. You just say AK-47, don't you? Because it probably is an AK-47. I'll get 10 texts now saying, actually, I think you'll find it's a Kalashnikov. An AK-47 assault rifle. There is a problem in the United States of America with guns and the ease with which they're accessed, as was demonstrated on Saturday night in Washington. But, of course, when you've got the president glamorizing them, it suggests that they're unlikely to get their act together on that front anytime soon. Glamorizing violence as well, of course, not just the use of guns. So, what was the other one? There's another one as well that was in... the White House posted a picture of Donald Trump with King Charles under the headline, "Two Kings." I mean, and Yesterday, I saw a photograph. Can you guess which one it was? Something posted from the Donald Trump regime, and I looked at it, and I thought, oh, no, this one is a fake. This one has been doctored. This one is a joke, a hoax, a parody. This one can't possibly be real, but it was real. Somebody called Kid Rock, who was sort of briefly a rock star, a successful rock star, addressing, and you might want to sit down for the next two words that I'm going to say to you. Someone called Kid Rock addressing the Pentagon. The Pentagon. I mean, what was that? That would be the equivalent of what? I don't even know. Justin Hawkins out of the darkness, popping into the Ministry of Defence to run through tactical operations in the Strait of Hormuz. That's not fair on Justin Hawkins out of the darkness. He always seems struck me as a really lovely bloke. But also, he'd have the wit and the modesty, I presume, to say, I think you might have phoned the wrong guy. I don't know that I am qualified to turn up at the actual Pentagon and start lecturing military leaders on anything, really, unless some of them are seeking to become second-rate rock stars, in which case I could probably give them a few pointers, but they look a little bit old, frankly, to be embarking upon a new career like that. Well, who might accept that invitation in the sort of annals of faded British rock royalty? Who might actually say, yes, I'm just the man you need? I can think of a few former footballers, but former rock stars who might actually say, yes, of course I'll pop by. I'll squeeze you in. Can I squeeze you in at 4 o'clock on Tuesday? I'm in town anyway. I'll pop into the Ministry of Defence to give some tactical lectures to your top brass. So that comes third. In the space of 24 hours, the idea of a ridiculous former rock star addressing the actual Pentagon is the third daftest image to emerge from that regime. You can choose between daft isn't even strong enough. Well, the most ridiculous, the most troubling. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Donald Trump touting a machine gun, complaining that Iran won't sign a nuclear deal when everybody knows that they did. And then you've got the two kings. I'm not American. Spoiler alert. If anyone is labouring under the illusion that I am, then you now know that I'm not Chico. You're just sending me faded rock stars now and asking me to imagine them turning up at the Ministry of Defence to deliver a speech on tactics. I don't think Morrissey would expect. Oh, well played. James Blunt. James Blunt could. James Blunt literally could provide a few pointers on matters military to some people actually involved in such matters. But, yeah, given the state of this country, it'll probably be Right Said Fred soon. But anyway, you look at these three little events and you are reminded of the... what is the word for something that is simultaneously ridiculous and disgusting? Because sometimes the ridiculousness dilutes the disgustingness, doesn't it? I don't know what the word would be. I don't know how you would describe that, how I would describe it. The idea that you find something, I mean, it's laughable until you remember how serious it is. You know, this is a man who boasts about how delighted he is that people have died and who insults the dead or who wishes death upon his political enemies and then pretends that other people have done the same to him and insists that they get sacked by their television station or get indicted. We'll get on to James. Hey, what is the relationship between Mystery Hour and the indictment of the former, was he the former?